is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. Boy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
It's a new weekend. We're back at One Bills Drive, getting set for the New Orleans Saints. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and welcome to the show for Monday, November 6th, a new week after what amounts to kind of a mini bye, Donald, with Saturday, Sunday off for players, and both of us had a little weekend off.
Yeah.
You feel good? You feel recharged, refreshed, ready to go?
No, I'm actually tired.
Did you say no?
Yeah, I'm kind of tired.
Why are you
the weekend
tired?
Was cool, though. Well, I had to travel back up here. I had to leave New Jersey at like 4:30 in the morning yesterday morning to get to JFK for my flight back up for an event yesterday. And you know, so I really haven't gotten a chance to rest. But the weekend was cool. I mean, my son had a game, a tournament game, like playoffs, and he was sick, so he didn't get to play in the game.
He didn't play.
No, had to hold him out. He wanted to play, too. And he was getting better, but he missed like 3 days of school last week, and it was like, you're not going to play in the game. And then end up still sick because it was like cold and windy and stuff. So we held him out. But, you know, we took him and he actually got some sneakers. So he was happy about that, you know. And then I watched a fight on Saturday night. That was hilarious.
Who fought? I missed that.
Dante Wilder, heavyweight fight, which they don't have many heavyweight fights. But this fight was hilarious. It was funny. And this is going to sound bad that I was laughing at it so hard. But the reason I was laughing was because I was with two of my boys, and they just made it funny. But this dude got knocked out in the first round, and he got dropped three times in literally like 56 seconds. And the way it happened just was hilarious. It really was.
I have to look for that. Hey, what was the event? You did something at Batavia Downs yesterday for DraftKings,
right? It was at, you know, Thurm's 34 Rush.
Yeah, at Batavia Downs.
At Batavia Downs, yeah. And, it was like FanDuel.
Oh, FanDuel.
Yeah, they do, you know, the whole fantasy tournament. Yeah. And they had, like, all of these guys who had won. It was like a tournament that they were having. And so everybody, they had all of the different games on, and it was a fantasy tournament. And whoever won, you know, I had to take pictures.
So a one-day fantasy tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the winner won, this guy, he won $1,000.
Were they looking to you for advice?
No. I was just sitting here watching
the
game.
Was it just the 1 o'clock games?
Just the 1 o'clock games, yeah. Yeah, just the 1 o'clock.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was, you know, when you see these guys, like, they were so into it. Like, you're trying to talk to them, and they're, like, on their phones trying to pay attention. I'm like, you.
What time did they have to have lineups in by? One?
I don't remember.
Because I wondered, there was some significant pre-game stuff going on yesterday,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, you have to ask the guys out there. I've never done fantasy, so I couldn't tell you, like, what time you need to have your lineups in by, but probably somewhere around.
Fournette news came out at 11:30 yesterday morning.
Probably somewhere around, like, 12:30-ish you'd have to have them in for a 1 o'clock game, something like that, but I could be totally wrong. I'm going to get a tweet on that. Oh, you don't know? You don't know when you're supposed to have your lineups?
But that, I'm sure, changed a few lineups. How many contestants were there, approximately?
Oh, man. Hundreds? It was a good
10?
Nah, it was about guys who were in the tournament. Yeah. It was probably about 30, 40 guys there. But then there were just a lot of people in the bar anyway, just watching the games anyway.
Good place to watch a game, probably. The
TV screen. They had the big screen, and then they had just a bunch of TVs on all around the bar, and it was fun.
And was Thurman there?
Thurm was at he was in Oklahoma.
Oh, that's right. I saw.
Yeah, he went to College Game Day.
Yeah.
on ESPN. So he was out there, which is why I actually filled in for him.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Good.
So, you know, it was cool. That was my first time being in his bar.
I've never been
out there. And he got the big Thurman Thomas on the ceiling and his jerseys and everything all around. It is cool.
Never been there. All right. Well, good. Good weekend. We're here getting ready to go with the Saints game coming up. Kind of a return to normalcy for the Bills. As far as the team itself, they just wrapped up practice outside in the indoors, but outside our room here in the Ad Pro Sports Training Center. About a 1 hour and 5 minute practice just wrapped up. Kelvin Benjamin taking part in his first practice as a Buffalo Bill. And as a matter of fact, we're going to be talking with Kelvin Benjamin in just a few minutes here on the show. The veteran wide receiver just acquired in the trade last Tuesday, I believe it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right before the trade deadline. He was in New Jersey with the Bills when they played. The Jets did not suit up for the game. We'll be talking with Kelvin Benjamin coming up today on the show when he joins us in studio. Also on the show today, Andrew Brandt from mmqb.si.com, business of NFL reporter. Andrew Brandt joins us today at 1 o'clock about a variety of things, the Colin Kaepernick case, the future of the commissioner, all that stuff coming up.
Ezekiel Elliott.
Although, what is it? I'm bored by that. Every week, that'll happen again this week.
Yeah,
a judge
be
has granted
suspended,
a temporary
and then,
stay.
Yeah, and then they come up with a different term.
Lifted. A judge has granted it. Every week, we go through the same dance.
And they come up with a new term every time.
Elliott will not play this week. Oh, a judge has granted a temporary stay. Elliott will be able to play every week. So, I mean, it sounds like that might be Elliott's strategy, right? Just kind of ride this out week to week.
Just ride it out and let the thing. And they needed him as they played Kansas City. They beat Kansas City, yeah. You know? So I was – couple of my boys who are Cowboys fans back home, I'm watching them last week on Twitter, and everybody's just going back and forth. And they're like, man, Ezekiel Elliott should just let this suspension go. Like, take your six games. And, like, he's going to mess around. If they make it to the playoffs, be suspended and can't play in the playoffs, you know. And the ones who are Cowboys fans are like, well, he didn't do it. Going back and forth on it, it's hilarious.
So we'll talk with him. You can ask the questions about Elliott. I'm tired of it. I am. I mean, who cares? Is he playing? Is he not? We'll figure it out. So Andrew Brandt joined us on the show. We are at midseason, right, for the Buffalo Bills now. The halfway point, 8 games down, 8 games left to go. And we're going to spend a little bit of time today talking about the Bills at midseason, about your view of the Bills at midseason, about what we think we know about the Bills at midseason. We don't know everything. I said this probably a dozen times over the weekend to folks asking this season. I wouldn't be surprised if it went either way. If they took off and won, if they won 5 of their final 8, wouldn't surprise me. If they lost 5 of their final 8, wouldn't surprise me. I think they're right on the edge there, and the season hangs in the balance over these next 8 weeks. I think it's kind of an exciting place to be.
They've shown that they can beat the good teams, and I think that's a good sign. You know, it's not like years in the past where it's like you beat up on – you know, teams who are not doing as well. They've shown that they can beat some good teams in this league. So, and I know when you look ahead the rest of the schedule, they got some tough sledding, you know, going forward with starting here this week with the Saints. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they were to beat these teams and win enough games to get into the playoffs. And to be honest with you, I think there's so much bad football in the league right now. Like, there are so many teams that are just around the same in terms of record-wise, talent-wise. So I wouldn't be shocked if they ended up in the playoffs, you know, in a wild card slot or something like that. I wouldn't be shocked because even though the Patriots have been playing well, you know, it's not like they're blowing teams out either, you know. So I wouldn't be shocked if they lost some more games. So it could go either way for the Bills. The good thing is they are getting healthier, you know. They're getting their guys back, and that's a plus moving forward.
So let's hear from you. We want to know from you today as we assess the Bills in midseason. A couple of things, but we'll start with the offense today. We'll do defense tomorrow. This is kind of a tough one. Who's the Bills' offseason MVP at midseason? That's our Twitter poll. We will discuss that with you on the telephone lines at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Who's the Bills' midseason offensive most valuable player? As Donald says, they should have Charles Clay coming back soon, if not this Sunday. Kelvin Benjamin expected to play this Sunday. Maybe one of those two would be the second-half offensive MVP. But right now, 8 games in, who's the Bills' midseason offensive most valuable player? We got some response on Twitter. We'd like to hear from you. The Twitter poll shows that 43% of you think it's the quarterback, Tyrod Taylor. 33% of you believe it is LeSean McCoy. 9% say Charles Clay and his production until he got hurt. 15% have somebody else in mind. Give us a call. It's better if we discuss this. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The Bills' midseason offensive MVP. I think some folks are confused. Some people responding on Twitter, naming some defensive players. We'll do defense tomorrow. But what about the offensive MVP? 803-0550. And either they're confused or they're just snarky. Could be either one.
Yeah.
You know, people naming Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer. Okay, maybe you're confused. Offensive MVP. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They didn't see the offense in there. Because tomorrow we'll do defense.
Right. Tomorrow we'll do defense. I think for me, I think you have to go with Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, I do.
Just because you look at LeSean McCoy, he's had some good games, but he hasn't been consistent every week and just going off every week. You know, it's been up and down. Like, man, where's the running game? And then the next week, it's like, oh, that's the running game right there. Have they gotten the running game back? And then you come out against Thursday night against the Jets, and it goes silent again. You know, so I think you have to go with Tyrod Taylor, having to play with guys who. I mean, he had some injuries at wide receiver. He still had to play with the guys who were on the field, and you know, for the most part, he's done what he's had to do to help this team to win. So I think you'd have to go with Tyrod Taylor. Charles Clay, you know, he's had some good games, but he's been injured, you know, and out for an extended period of time. So I don't think you could put him in there. I think you'd have to go with Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, I would go with him, although – I think we're going to talk with Chris Brown about it. Brownie will be in here at 2 o'clock today. It appears that Tyrod is taking slowly the next half step forward. I think if you look at his last three games in particular, we'll talk with Chris Brown about that. So I would name him as the midseason offensive MVP, and I'm really eager to see what's left in the tank this second half of the season for Tyrod Taylor. He's thrown the ball better, quite frankly, over the last 3 weeks, showing more confidence and trust in his receivers over the middle over the last 3 weeks. I do think the return of Charles Clay will help that along, and I think Kelvin Benjamin as well is going to help that along. So the best might be yet to come this second half of the season for Tyrod Taylor. But yes, given the lack of any other really good options, I would name him my offensive MVP. We'll take your thoughts on that. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Before we get to that, in our assessment of the first half of the Bills season, it's important to note, Donald, that the Bills played Thursday. The rest of the league obviously played yesterday. One more game tonight in the NFC. The Bills dropped one spot in playoff standings. They are now the sixth seed in the AFC. They were fifth going into the week with their 5-3 record. Now 3-2 in the conference. The Bills, the sixth seed, which still keeps them in the playoff hunt. Now, they're in the playoffs if the season ended today, not in the hunt. We want to talk about this as the show goes along. But so those top six, and say what you want about the AFC, Pittsburgh, New England, Kansas City, Tennessee, Jacksonville, then Buffalo in the standings right now. So who are the challengers? Who is going to knock the Bills out when it comes to the fifth or sixth wild card playoff spot? Is it Miami? The way they played lately, can anyone see that? And the Bills get them twice. They get to play them twice. Is it Baltimore? Can anybody see the Ravens punching the Bills out of the playoffs? Is it Oakland, whom the Bills have already beaten? Is it the Jets, who the Bills have split with? I think it's look, we don't know what the season, how it's going to play out. And as you know, Donald, you said a minute ago how they got some tough games coming up. Yes, they do. They've also had some tough games already that they've played, including some wins that looked pretty good at the time, Denver and Tampa Bay in particular, and even Oakland, pretty good win. But what's it going to look like as the season goes along? We don't know. For folks who say, well, the toughest part of the schedule is coming up, well, there are folks who would have told you, well, the toughest part of the schedule back in September, they would have said the toughest part of the schedule was, you know, to have to play Denver and then have to go to Atlanta and then go to Cincinnati. You know, I mean, you don't know who the toughest part of the schedule is. I know who's coming up. I know it's Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers and Alex Smith and Tom Brady. Okay, tough quarterbacks. But what are those teams going to look like when the Bills get to them in the next month or so? I don't think you can say. The important thing is they are in the playoffs as the season ended today. That doesn't get you anything. But somebody's going to have to beat them out. And as you look at those contenders, whether it's the Dolphins, the Ravens, the Raiders, or the Jets, I don't know who that would be. Can you name one team there that you would say, look out? All right, I'll tell you who it might be. I'll give you two possibilities. Baltimore, I think, with their defense, is good enough to get in a role here and maybe punch the Bills out. And the Raiders, who, yes, the Bills have already beaten. But with all that firepower, the Raiders, I think, have potential to punch the Bills out of the playoff picture. But, you know, it's a bit of a leap to identify one of those teams behind them in the standings and say, that's the team that will surpass the Bills.
I think the Raiders could be a team just because, like, you never know what's going to happen in that AFC West, you know, and they all still have to play each other, but the Raiders have enough talent to win games, and they didn't play well here in Buffalo, but they showed last night, you know, that they have enough talent to win games. Marshawn Lynch was Marshawn Lynch last night. He was running like beast mode. I think he had like two touchdowns last night. I think they have enough talent, and they have the quarterback that can get it done if he plays consistently. He hasn't been playing that consistent this year. But I think that's a team that could really challenge, even though the Bills have beaten them. I think, you know, they could go on a run just with the talent that they have on their team. In terms of Baltimore, I'm not sure about Baltimore, you know, because I think, you know, obviously they still have to play Pittsburgh. They still have to play Cincinnati, you know, on their schedule. I'm not sure the rest of their schedule, but, you know, I don't really have much faith in Joe Flacco, to be honest with you, as their quarterback. And so I'm not sure about Baltimore, but I do think that Oakland is a team that could challenge for it.
All right, so what do you think about that? The Bills, you know, who's their biggest threat in the AFC? Where do you see the team that's going to punch them out of the playoff picture? Give us a call on all of this. We will work through our midseason review as the show goes along. We'll do a little bit of it tomorrow as well. Phone lines open 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. And who's the offensive MVP for the first half of the season? We'll start with James in Buffalo. Hello, James. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey. How you doing?
Good.
Good, good. As you guys were talking about the middle of the season, we are at the midway point, but like you guys said, the schedule, when it first comes out, looks a little different. It seemed like we got through the hardest part of the schedule in the beginning, but now as the season goes along, it's, you know, looking like we might be set for a harder second half, especially with the Saints coming up and the Chiefs. Another thing is that game Thursday night, Tyrod, he's getting a fair shake on that. But he was under pressure. But another thing that he could do is, throw, like, a bad pass, like, over a receiver's head instead of taking a sack. That's all I have to say. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, throw a bad pass. Oh, that's hard to do. I mean, you need to throw it out of bounds, but – look, the Jets just did a good job of containing him in the pocket, and he couldn't really – he couldn't do anything. He couldn't see. He couldn't get out of the pocket. He just – it was an overall tough game for – Tyrod Taylor actually played well in that game. He was efficient throwing the ball. He did take some sacks, but the Bills' offensive line could not protect him, And so I don't really put that loss all the way on Tyrod's shoulders. There was a lot – much more to how much pressure he was getting. And for me, it was on the offensive line.
Yeah, me too. It's one thing, James, to say, now we think the toughest part of the schedule is coming up. I maintain, and I've said this for months now, you don't know what the schedule is going to look like. When you get a month from now and you've got the Dolphins coming in here and you got Dolphins in two of the last 3 weeks, or we have a pretty good sense of who the Patriots are, but the Chiefs going to Kansas City the Sunday after Thanksgiving. How do you know? The Chiefs have lost three in a row, I believe, here. Is that really the toughest team you think that's on the schedule? And what we thought we knew about the schedule when we were going in is a little bit different now. All I'm saying is, the road ahead, the next four games looks tough. But back in September, though, there was a four-game stretch that looked equally tough when you talked about the visit by the Broncos and a trip to Atlanta and a trip to Cincinnati and then home after that with Oakland coming in after the bye, or Tampa, I guess, came in. But it always looks a little bit daunting. But things are going to change. I believe things are going
to
change.
Yeah, it's week to week. Things will definitely change. The one thing that you do know, because you can talk about the entire team, like they're going to play the Saints. The Saints are a good team, and they have some weapons on that team. Some of those guys can go down. But I think the one thing that you can say in terms of the schedule that they have coming up and it being a tough part of the schedule is that you play some very good quarterbacks here coming up. And Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, he's one of the better quarterbacks, I think, in the history of the game. You still have Tom Brady. Alex Smith is playing at an MVP level, except for these last three losses. I think you do have some tough quarterbacks coming up here. And this defense, as we're going to get into some midseason stuff, this defense, in the beginning of the season, we're talking about this defense is good, man. This defense, they're not allowing anybody to score. They're not really allowing a lot of yards. But the last few weeks, they've been giving up a lot of yards, especially to quarterbacks that can throw it. And teams that have wide receivers on the outside that they can throw it to, So I think it is a very tough part of the schedule coming up. The good thing is you got the Saints at home. And I said that yesterday. I was watching the Saints game yesterday, and they were playing in New Orleans, and I'm like, man, it's a good thing that they're playing the Saints here in Buffalo, because playing them in that stadium, the way they're rolling on offense, even their defense is playing well right now, it would be a tough game to play. It's going to be a tough game, but, the one plus that you do have is that home field advantage.
Here is David in Buffalo. Welcome to the show, David. You're on the air with us.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Donald, and I heard, John, you kind of supported him on this. Now, you said earlier in the show that the Bills have proven this year that they can beat good teams. I'm just going to have to argue that because they haven't beaten anyone that's got a winning record, and they've lost to some teams that have losing records. If they haven't beaten anybody, they're going to start playing some people, and it's going to start this Sunday. Hopefully the home field advantage can carry us, but good luck. Now you're going to start playing real teams. They haven't played anybody.
I'm sorry. David, you can't say they haven't played real teams. Denver is a good team. I don't care what their record is. Atlanta's a good team. I don't care what their record shows. Yeah, their receivers went down. And Oakland Raiders are a good team, too. They have a lot of talent on that team. Just because you're looking at the records doesn't mean that those weren't tough teams to play.
Maybe the Bills are a good team. You know, maybe the Bills are beating teams because they're good. I don't know. We have a definitive answer to that yet.
Right.
Look, you play who's in front of you. You win when you can, and you kind of move on. You take your wins and put them in your pocket and move on. I always bristle when people try to create these artificial hurdles for teams to clear. Well, this is a statement game. This game will tell us what we need to know. This game is the one game that will define that. No. There's 16 of them.
Right.
They're all, you know, NFL teams. Some are teams are better than others. You play who's in front of you. You try to win who's in front of you, and you move on. And you don't look back and say, "Oh, that was a good win. Oh, now they're 4-4. Oh, the Falcons are 4-4. That wasn't such a great win." No, that's not the way to look at it.
Yeah.
I don't think.
You know, we can.
One of those four on the loss side is from Buffalo.
we can look at like your record, right? And this is, you can find a stat to prove any argument that you want to prove, you know? And so when we look at these teams' records, you're like, oh, well, this team is not playing that. That doesn't mean they're not a good team. These teams have a lot of talent. Look at the Oakland Raiders. They have a lot of talent. They didn't play well here, you know? And going into that game, here's the crazy thing. Going into the Denver game, nobody picked the Bills to win that game. Going into Atlanta, nobody picked the Bills to win that game. And the Oakland Raiders game, there were a lot of people who didn't think that the Bills would beat Oakland either. But now that the Bills have beaten them and those teams, you know, have gone on to maybe lose another game or two or something like that, then it's like, well, they haven't played anybody.
Right.
We weren't saying the same thing that week when they were playing that team.
If the Bills beat them, they can't be that good, basically, is what these guys are saying. You know, one of those four Atlanta losses came at the hands of Buffalo. One of those five Oakland losses came right here in Buffalo, right? And those count. But, you know, you don't need to create these artificial hurdles and, well, until they do this or until they beat this team, then I'll believe. No, you don't. It doesn't do any good to think of it in those terms, I don't think. Just kind of relax, enjoy it, play the schedule that's in front of you. That's all you can do. Tom calling from West Seneca. Hello, Tom.
Good afternoon, John. Don, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment on this game coming up with the Saints. We are going to beat the Saints. We know why we lost to the Jets. We know we're a better team than the Jets. And we know what we're capable of. And we certainly are capable of beating the Saints. We know what we have to do. We have to limit our turnovers and our penalties to near zero. This is a really good team. We are going to make the playoffs, 10-6 or 11-5. And let me also we're well rested, and we have the 12th man home field advantage. And one comment about the Kelvin Benjamin.
Uh-huh.
I watched his profile on a sales show previous years, and he looks pretty good.
He's good. He's going to be on the show in a minute or two. But what you're talking about, too, is moving on from the Jets game, and Sean McDermott talked about that earlier today when he met with the media. He asked if it was tough for the Bills to put the Jets game behind them.
The way you look at it, the way I've been around the NFL, and I really learned this from Andy Reid, you take it, you learn from it, and then you have to move on. There was quite a few years in Philadelphia where we had a loss like this over the years, and you know, you don't want to overreact to it, but you got to learn from it. You got to be direct and learn from it, and then you have to move on, because the NFL, as you see every week, as we saw this weekend when we had a chance to watch games, and then college the same way. You got to be able to move on, get back into the process of preparing for the next opponent, and then come out and have your best foot forward every week in this league, because that's really how you sustain success. And you're going to go through some of these, as you've heard me say, you know, highs and lows, and you got to stay together and stay confident at the same time. But you got to keep learning the whole way through.
Sean McDermott, I think that's the right perspective, you know, what has to happen over the next couple of weeks. But we'll see if they can make that happen starting this week. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we return, Kelvin Benjamin, fresh off the field, his first official practice as a Buffalo Bill. Kelvin Benjamin will join us here in studio. Donald and I here until 3. Happy to take your phone calls. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. Bills practice ended about 15, 20 minutes ago. And joining us in studio, not the newest Bill anymore, but he's a new guy, Kelvin Benjamin, a veteran wide receiver acquired in the trade last Tuesday, 6 days ago. Kelvin, welcome to the show. Welcome to Buffalo.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
I was asking you this. Have you settled in yet?
I got a place, so we'll be moving in 2 weeks, but I'm ready to get settled, though.
Coach McDermott was saying today how he gave you an opportunity to go home, collect your stuff, come back up here, and yet you decided to stay here all weekend, huh?
I mean, because it's crucial. You got to learn the playbook. You know what I'm saying? Learning that playbook is crucial because that's the only way you can play fast. And so I'm just trying to get a jump start on it.
So, Bill, you were in New York or in Newark or wherever you were, New Jersey Thursday, and you come home with the team on Friday. What did you do as far as learning the playbook Friday, Saturday, Sunday? What was your role?
Came and did walkthroughs, the coach field, walkthroughs, and just running the routes, going through the routes patterns. There's a little difference. But just walkthroughs on walkthroughs, really.
Now, we always talk about rules when a player comes from somewhere else. You know, you might have – a hitch route might have a different rule in terms of a certain coverage or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's also different in the terms of how a quarterback or how they want you to run a route, you know. And so how much different is it from Carolina to here?
It's different. It's definitely different.
Yeah.
Let's say on big sixes, right? You know, most at Carolina, they had big sixes. So you get 18. You push up to about 18 yards.
What's a big six? What does that mean?
In breaking route.
Okay.
Yeah. So in breaking route by 18 yards.
Okay.
But you caught a couple of them.
But in Carolina, they liked it more of a speed cut. Yeah. So you stick that 1 foot in the ground. You know, here is a little different. So you take that, and then you break off in.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I think that's a little better because DBs tend to read body language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they see kind of when you're about to roll in on that one in breaking cut. So when you hit them with that tat-tat, they just don't know. You know what I'm saying? You can still go out on the end with that.
So the tat-tat is more breaking down, square off?
Yep.
Gotcha.
Yep.
You did catch passes against the Bills back in week two early on. I mean, didn't you catch that opening drive? You were getting loose down on the sideline.
Yeah, I was.
What are you laughing about? We don't laugh about that loss.
Did you talk junk to the guys here? Like, you know, I did.
Especially Leonard, man. I was kept messing with Leonard, man. Just even seeing that guy out there, though. But like I said, man, the boys, they brought energy that game, you know what I'm saying? And it was a tough win for us.
You also had the play, and maybe they feel like they got your back again. Jordan Poyer hit you pretty hard down near the goal line.
He did, man. He got me right in my ribs. He knocked the wind out of me. I actually caught the ball, but when he got me and knocked all that wind out of me, my fingers just got, like, they went numb. Like, it was, the ball just dropped out.
It's like, did you talk to Poyer about that one
at all? I did. He told me. He was like, man, once I hit you, though, I feel like I hit a brick wall.
Kelvin Benjamin in studio with us. That really is your calling card, isn't it? Your size and you know, you're wide. I mean, that's got to be the thing that you must feel you bring to the game on a regular basis.
Definitely, though. But I think it's going to help me a lot more, too, you know what I'm saying, even being around you guys. A little bit more smaller, fast, quick receivers because I tend to study, like, watch smaller guys because – I mean, I want to play fast. I want to play like a small guy. My size just take care of itself.
Yeah. Now, what do you have? Because a lot of people have, I guess, criticized you, or when they break down your game, they like to say, well, he doesn't create that much separation from DBs.
I mean, I don't got to, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, no disrespect, but I don't got to, you know what I'm saying? My wingspan is outrageous, and you know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, a receiver catches the ball, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to catch that ball.
There's separation one way, speed, but there's also separation this way and this way. That's what
you're talking about. Definitely. It's all angles. I mean, football is all angles and leverage, and it's football.
Did you play basketball when you were younger?
A little bit, though. I ain't want to get into that.
You must have got dunked on or something. You got dunked on or something like that? You're too big to get
dunked on. Oh, man. No. Hey, what his name was? Brandon Knight came down to our high school.
Okay.
That man was a little too advanced for us. In high school, he was too advanced. Yeah.
Is that where you learned how to – because you know how to box DBs out. Is that where you kind of learned how to
– Oh, definitely. No, definitely, yeah. It just once playing basketball, when I got on the football field, it was just second nature.
Hey, Kelvin, let's talk about your background. And we were just talking before we came on the air. You're from Belgrade, Florida, which is also where Deontay Thompson is from, the Bills receiver just added to the roster a couple of weeks ago. And it's really the home of a lot of good almost receivers in the league come from that area, right?
Yeah, a lot of guys, man. You can go on and on from, I mean, Santonio Holmes to Rita Anthony. I mean, you can go on and on for real, for real. Travis Benjamin, that's over there balling.
Now, you and Deion, y'all lived in the same building.
Same building.
He was telling us, right?
Oh, yes. You were kids, right?
Yeah, same building.
So you knew him? Did you play with him?
Man, we played everything together. I mean, man, we used to get crates and walk around acting like we in the band, playing backyard football. I mean, going into the cane fields and making clubhouses, all kinds of stuff, man.
What? You know, it's crazy because Deontay told us that, not knowing that.
Yeah, Kelvin was coming.
He was going to come here. Yeah,
that's right. He did. He said, oh, you know who else is from there? Kelvin Benjamin. We're like, oh, wow.
Lived in the same building.
And then a week later, here you are. What is it about that place that produces wide receivers, NFL wide receivers? Is there a particular high school coach or program or something?
I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, it was because I kind of got on football kind of late, you know what I'm saying? But I was watching Travis. I was watching Deontay Ball. And, you know, once I started seeing them guys, you know what I'm saying, reading about them in the newspapers, so I seen a lot of good stuff, positive stuff about them, and I was like, man, I'm going to play ball when I get to high school, and I just followed their footsteps. I mean, I started taking visits down to Florida, hanging with D, you know, he was showing me around the campus. I mean, that's what I – and then after
but
that,
you
I
you ended
like,
up going there?
No.
Nah.
Nah.
what happened with that?
To be honest, though, it was kind of close to coming out of college. I mean, because Urban Meyer, Jimbo, and it was Randy Shannon at the time. Mm-hmm. And – Randy Shannon had ended up getting fired, and Urban might end up just resigning. So it was an easy choice after that.
You played with EJ there, right?
I did play
FSU,
with EJ.
Yeah. Were you friends? Are you buddies with EJ?
EJ was cool. Yeah, EJ was cool. I only played that one season with him, though. We had a big loss against NC State that year. We was 3 in the country. Disappointing. Yeah, disappointing.
I remember that year. You know, somebody on Twitter, great interview with you, but tell them to change your Twitter handle. Your picture, I guess, your profile picture.
Oh, I definitely update that, man. I got you. I got you. I got you. I'm Buffalo, man. I'm Buffalo.
What is it with the number 13? It's supposed to be unlucky.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of receivers, though.
Yeah, but
that were 13.
Yeah, especially in my class, too. I mean, it was because I played one when I went to Florida State. I had one. Mm-hmm. And 3 when I was in high school. And I just kind of put it together for real. But once I got it, and then I remember going to the rookie symposium, and you know what I'm saying? I'm asking everybody, like, what you got? 13. I'm like, it must be crazy. Something great about it.
Now, like you said, your class was a very good class. It's turned out to be a very good class. Do you guys, I don't know if you talk to all of those guys from your class, but do you guys talk trash back and forth?
I don't think it's kind of like a silent trash, you know what I'm saying? At the same time, you know, you watching them and you see them get off, and it just makes you want to go harder that week, makes you want to perform harder that week, you know what I'm saying? So definitely, man, I like to see them guys balling. Because when I see them, you kind of get mad in a sense, you know what I'm saying? I guess you call it hating if you want, you know what I'm saying? But I'm just competitive, so. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Kelvin Benjamin in studio with us, just a couple of minutes left. What role do you think you having or they having familiarity with you, and I'm talking about Brandon being the GM and Sean McDermott a little bit in Carolina, do you think that played a role in how they went out and pursued you last week? What do you think?
Definitely, man. I think I knew what they knew what I could bring to the field, you know, and bring to the team, but I think what they kind of looked and seen what I bring to the locker room, you know what I'm saying? I'm a very humble guy. I mean, real chill. You know what I'm saying? Real friendly. I'm a big team guy. You know what I'm saying? Because it's all about winning. You know what I'm saying? You need that team to be that one unit. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You can't be selfish. And that's the type of guy I am. I mean, I want everybody to ball. I want everybody to eat.
Was there any – hasn't it – not that you had a choice, but, you know, the team you left was just in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And most of that team is still there. Were you at all hesitant or thinking, man, I kind of wanted to see how this turned out here in Carolina?
I mean, not really. Tell you the truth, because I mean it's sort of the same team, but it's not the same team. You know what I'm saying? There was a lot of guys that was on that team that was key parts, like Harper. You know what I'm saying? You can go on and on for real. I mean, that played big roles in that team. I mean, it'd be Jericho Kotcher. I mean, he'll coach now there.
Yeah.
You know, but
that's my boy, Jericho.
Like I said, I mean, I'm excited with the change. You know, because it's so I can come somewhere else and I can grow and I can learn. You know what I'm saying? It's my first time in the West Coast offense and. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Just expanding the knowledge and expanding.
How hard was it for you that year that they went to the Super Bowl? For you, you got hurt, and so you didn't really get to take part in any of that stuff. And you saw the team go 15-1 or something like that, and they were out there having fun and everything. They go on to the Super Bowl.
I mean, I knew because even when I got drafted there, okay, the first year we, you know what I'm saying, we end up going to the playoffs, and But you can just see the the upwards. You can see the team going upward. You see they bringing in more players. They're bringing in it's just a different vibe. You know what I'm saying? Everybody hanging with each other off the field, on the field. And when we got into that 15 training camp, man, it was so competitive. Like, when that defense stepped on us, like, we knew. Like, we looked at them like, y'all ain't going to stop us. You know what I'm saying? And just having that. You know what I'm saying? Ted Ginn came in, man. He was playing good. But at the same time, in that receiver room, that's what it's going to take, you know what I'm saying, for them guys to come together like brothers, you know what I'm saying, that unselfish, you know what I'm saying, and that's what we had that year. So it's like when I got hurt, we're already having that, they was ready to go.
You've been here 5 or 6 days. Do you pick up on any vibe here in Buffalo yet in the short time you've been here?
Man, definitely, man. They got a lot of good guys, man. You could tell it's team-oriented, so I'm excited. And
the last time you were under Coach McDermott, he was a defensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's the head coach. Is he different?
Nah, same guy, man.
Same dude.
We same guy. I mean, of course, you got to be a little bit, you know what I'm saying, a little bit more serious because not everybody looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
But, he hold you accountable, man. But he at the same time, he tell you, you know what I'm saying, don't be all tense, you know, have fun with it, you know, at the same time. So, I mean, I like it, man. Like I told him after that first game, kind of texted me and was just like, you know what I'm saying, sorry you had to see that. I'm like, nah, coach, like, at the end of the day, y'all brought energy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it was a couple of plays, really, that changed the momentum of that game, for real, for real.
Were you at all – could you have played last Thursday if you had to? I mean, some people thought you might. You know, you're off a plane, Tuesday night? You got here Tuesday night, right?
I mean, I think every player would go into that situation like, yeah, I want to play.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But to play fast, I kind of just wanted to sit back and really kind of just learn the plays, you know what I'm saying, so I can really put it out there and leave it out there, you know. And then at the same time, you know, get the guys who worked that week, you know, they changed the plan because they did work that week. So,
how much have you had a chance to catch passes from Tyrod practice over the last 4 or 5 days?
Just started the day, really. Today? I mean, we warmed up at that. You can see on TV, we warmed up in the pregame with him.
Yeah.
He got no floaters. I like it. He got no floaters. They float, man. But I like it, man. I'm excited to go get them.
That's funny. He had them floaters.
Yeah.
Explain that to the people listening.
It's just different. You know what I'm saying? Some balls kind of zip through the wind and just zip, but some balls just kind of sit. They kind of sit, and you kind of just can zone in on it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just different adjustment. You can go get that ball.
See, I like when a quarterback has that. I guess those floaters, as you just called it. But sometimes it's like, all right, I know the safety is coming.
Yeah.
Like, come down out of the skies before I get hit right now.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. Jack, I go get it for him.
How did this first practice today go, and what do you envision your role coming up this week?
It went good. I mean, I was nervous, but at the same time, I was just trying to go fast. Yeah, I mean, you're nervous because, you know what I'm saying? new offense, new team. You're trying to impress people.
You think everybody looking at you, looking towards you?
Definitely, I can tell. As soon as you catch it, you can just tell. All right.
It's going to be like 73,000 people looking at you Sunday. I hope you're ready for that. Right?
I'm ready, man. I can't wait. I mean, the guys been telling me about the atmosphere. I mean, everybody, like, there's no atmosphere, you know, in the league like it. So
you got a North Face?
North Face?
You don't even know what a North Face is.
What is a North Face?
What is a North Face?
Yeah.
The coat? Uh-huh. You got some clothes for the weather up here, man?
Oh, I got to go do some shopping. I ain't got no winter clothes.
Why would you, right? You're in Carolina.
He's in Carolina.
No winter clothes. I got to do some shopping, though. I'm excited, though. I mean, now I get the 4 seasons, so now I do get the winter clothes. And I always wanted the winter
clothes. Well, you'll have one season from now until April, and then the other 3 seasons. Hey, Kelvin, thanks
all
for
in
this.
All in 1 month. The other 3 seasons, all in 1 month.
Thanks for this, Kelvin. It's great to have you here. I know fans are really excited about having you on the team.
Oh, man, I'm excited.
Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Kelvin Benjamin, the Bills' new wide receiver, just off the field from his first practice. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
More of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and our thanks again to Kelvin Benjamin, brand new Bills wide receiver, for joining us in studio. Interesting guy. Good guy, Donald. I mean, the guy's accomplished quite a bit in his first 3+ years in the league, and you never know it. Kind of a fresh approach to it sounds like a fresh approach to a new team, and no qualms at all about changing teams in the middle of the season.
And that, probably deep down he has some, you know, like y'all traded me away. You know,
you're saying
it's not
he's
like
not being honest with us?
No, I'm sure he's being honest. You know, I'm sure it's not something that he's really, really down about. But at the same time, there's no way that you can be traded from a team that drafted you, that you've been playing. You know, you've been playing well enough where you wouldn't think that they would do that.
That's a team that's had some success.
Right. You know, and you've been there now for a few years, and then all of a sudden they trade you somewhere else. I mean, it's hard to just say, I don't really care about it. You know, yeah. I'm sure deep down he really does. But it is exciting because it's a new start for him. You know, he gets to come here and, you know, just do something here and be a part of something, maybe something great, you know, and helping this team get back to the playoffs for the first time in 17 years. And when you think about all of that stuff, it kind of trumps the fact that you got traded away. Now, if he would have been traded somewhere that they're terrible right now, like one and pick a number, then it'd be like, really? Like, y'all traded me to them. Yeah. What did I do wrong for that?
Right. You know, we talked about Carolina and what's going on down there, and I'm not prepared to say that Carolina's falling apart, but it does. He even mentioned it. A lot of the people who won the NFC a couple of years ago are gone. A lot of the key players are gone. And it seems to me, from the outside looking in at Carolina, you know, they've had a general manager switch, and, you know, Cam is sort of up and down, especially emotionally. Cam Newton, you wonder if things have changed dramatically down there since the Super Bowl year. You know what I mean? You almost get the sense that they've lost I'm not going to say swagger because I don't know what that word means, but it's almost like they've lost their
They did lose some swag from that team. They did lose some swag.
I don't know. Well, you got to define. I think they've lost something from that team that went to the Super Bowl.
So
what does that mean?
Number
they lost
one,
swag.
It does look like they're kind of rebuilding that team up.
But you know, they handled the Bills. We know that. And they're 6-3, by the way, right?
Now, they still have a good team, you know, but they are making moves like this one. You know, they have – now, Christian McCaffrey, who's become, you know, their guy. They want to get him the ball. And,
right.
and a guy like now Funches, who has become the number one receiver. You know, it's just like a lot of new faces down there. They don't have their defensive coordinator and the guy that built that team up. I don't even know how long Luke Kuechly can still go with all of his concussions and stuff like that. I think pretty soon, you know, that team is probably going to fall off.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they really are in a rebuild type of phase, transition phase. Cam Newton, as good as Cam Newton has been, I think he still has a lot to learn about being the face of a franchise.
I agree.
You know, and the way to handle certain things and all of that stuff. So, you know, and then you have the general manager change. There's a lot of changes down there that would make you scratch your head. But they're still, 6-3, like you said?
Six and three.
And they're still, you know, trying to make it back and win that division, make it back to the playoffs. But that is an interesting team to watch over the next couple of years and see how they change everything over.
Kelvin Benjamin is a Buffalo Bill now, and earlier today, Sean McDermott, Bill's head coach, was asked how eager he was to see Benjamin in practice with his team. First one today. Here's what Coach McDermott said today before practice.
A team is never made up of just one guy. So let's get over that. Let's get past that. He will integrate into what we're doing and add to what we're doing. We've got good players already in this building, and we were able to add another good player with Kelvin. So I expect him to embed into what we're doing and work on being, a good teammate and B, learning the system. So I look forward to seeing how we're going to use him. Rick is going to implore him into the offense in terms of matchups and all those things that go into it. For right now, we're about to take the field in less than an hour here and see how well he's been able to pick up some of the offense to this point and then go from there, really.
Was it encouraging to you, the fact that he stayed over the weekend, to catch up on what the offense is? And what did that show you?
Well, it showed me his commitment. You know, he moved up here in a very short amount of time, and I offered him the chance to go home and get some clothes and get organized, and he said, no, Coach, I want to stay and get this offense, you know, down as best I can in a short amount of time here. So that showed me he's committed to the cause at this point.
Sean McDermott talking about Kelvin Benjamin, who did get in some work today with the Bills. Kelvin Benjamin also, you know, has some playbook to learn, and he talked about that with us. McDermott talked about that, how, you know, it might just be that every week Benjamin gets a little more introduction to the Buffalo Bills offensive playbook, and that's how he will learn it. Here's what the head coach had to say.
There's concepts that he will learn by each game plan, but to your point, Chris, yeah, I mean, he's just going to have to go on a game-to-game game plan approach at this point, and that's what you do when you kind of come in halfway through the season.
Having seen him all those years in Carolina, physically, though, what kind of presence is he out there in a matchup nightmare potentially for opposing defenses?
Well, he's tough because, you know, you have a threat outside that if you want to go one-on-one out there, you know, that's on you, you know. And then that opens up the run game. So it's a nice little dynamic there, and then you look at what we already have with the run game and the tight end now with Charles potentially coming back, and you know, and Tyrod and the other receivers. You know, you've got some things that you've got that a defense must contend with. So that said, it's about what we do. You know, there's got to be fundamentals. You can't just show up. You got to play with great effort, great fundamentals, great intensity, and you got to work together. So, as a team, and so that part doesn't change. Like I said before, it's one player. One player does not make a team. It's 11 guys, all of us doing our job the right way.
Sean McDermott talking about Kelvin Benjamin's acclimation to the playbook, and more than playbook, Donald, it sounded like some just route running techniques. Kelvin talked about what a big six he called it. Difference. Mm-hmm. What would be the difference? Why would Buffalo do it differently than Carolina?
Just, it really is based on the offensive coordinator and the wide receiver coach and how they want to run that route. Now a big six, an end cut, which that's like his number one route. We always talk about him being a deep threat down the field, throw the ball up to him. But if you watch him, he catches a lot of in cuts, like 15 to 20 yard in cuts. You know, that's kind of his thing, coming over the middle of the field. And so sometimes they want you to roll into your break instead of, like he was saying, tat tat. That means they want you to break down and kind of square it off a little bit more. So down in Carolina, they want you to roll it so that it's kind of like you're bending into that in cut, because it's called a speed cut. You know, and you're running it with speed so that the defense doesn't get enough time to catch up to you. Here, they want you to break down and just, you know, get a little more creative with it, you know, and you can juke a DB out and create separation that way, you know. So it's that's what I mean. Like, it's always going to be different. He's been doing the end cut a certain way down in Carolina for so long. Now he might get in the game and revert back to, you know, running it that way, you know, because he's been doing that for so long.
And that little change could disrupt timing with the quarterback, I would think.
If he was to run a speed cut here when the quarterback is looking for him to run an end cut,
yeah,
that would throw the timing off. It's a little bit different. Now, Tyrod Taylor is not a timing quarterback, you know, so it's not like he's, you know, playing with somebody who throws everything based on time, because I don't think that's really going to affect Tyrod Taylor in the way he sees the route, because Tyrod Taylor is a guy who, you know, he doesn't throw on anticipation like that. So I don't think it's going to really disrupt Tyrod Taylor.
You doing nuts and bolts tomorrow on the show? Would you do that?
Yeah,
and can you make a request? It's like calling up a radio show. I'm making a request.
Okay.
Can you break down some of these nuances of route running, maybe getting Kelvin Benjamin?
Yeah, our producer's in our ear saying done.
Done? It's already done? You guys are already?
I don't know. I didn't have anything to do with this yet, you know. But, yeah, we can definitely do that.
1:30
look
tomorrow?
At some of his routes and what he's good at, what he likes to do.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. That's something to look forward to tomorrow. Hey, our Twitter poll today. Who's the Bills' midseason offensive MVP? We're keeping it to offense today. We'll do defense tomorrow. It's tough to find an offensive MVP for this Bills team. Is, you know, 5-3 record, pretty good record. Tough to find an offensive MVP, but we've had the poll up there for more than an hour now with a lot of votes, 3,100 votes. 42% of you say Tyrod Taylor is the offensive MVP. 32% say LeSean McCoy. 18% have somebody else in mind. 6% or 8% say Charles Clay. Who do you think it is? Give us a call. Bob in Lockport has some thoughts on this. Bob, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it very much.
Sure.
Enjoy the program. I have two people for most valuable player. Tyrod Taylor, for obvious reasons, they've been stated. But I also like the field goal kicker. He's dependable. He can make 50 yarders, and he pushes the ball in the end zone so they can't run the ball out of the end zone.
Yeah.
Yes, you can put him on offense.
I thought about that. And we're probably not going to do separate
special teams,
but we are going to talk about special teams as we move through the show, and Donald and I will talk about what we know, what we don't know, what we hope happens. What are we saying?
It's what we know. It's what we know and what we still have to figure out about this team.
That's coming up as the show moves along. Coming up after the top of the hour break here, we're going to talk with Andrew Brandt with mmqb.si.com. He covers the business side of the NFL, and there's a lot to talk with Andrew Brandt about that. But give us a call if you'd like to join the conversation about anything at all, 803-0550, and toll free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network. Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive, where practice is over. A Monday practice for the Bills as they come back after having the weekend off. The little mini-bye for the Buffalo Bills. No practice today for wide receiver Zay Jones. He is listed as day-to-day with his knee injury. Charles Clay, also day-to-day, but progressing, according to head coach Sean McDermott. The tight end Charles Clay held out today, getting some individual work on the side. And E.J. Gaines getting some individual position drills, but both are day-to-day. Wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin did practice today, his first workout with the team since being acquired 6 days ago, his first real practice. We just had him on the show. You can find some highlights from that up a little bit later on today on our website. The Bills made a move over the weekend to get some depth at running back as they signed running back Travaris Cadet. He replaces Tywan Jones, who's lost to the season with a broken arm. He went on injured reserve. Cadet was most recently with the Jets, signed when Matt Forte was out of the lineup with a turf toe, and then released by the Jets October 24. And a practice squad move for the Bills today, another running back. They signed running back Marcus Murphy, 26 years old, former seventh-round pick of the Saints in 2015, most recently on the Colts practice squad. So those moves made it running back for the Buffalo Bills. Eli Manning may not be the starter for the Giants, according to head coach Ben McAdoo. He would not rule out the possibility of benching Manning so he can get a look at rookie Davis Webb. Manning has started 207 consecutive regular season games for the New York Giants. They lost to the Rams yesterday, 51-7. Monday Night Football tonight as the football week comes to an end. It's the Detroit Lions 3-4 and the Green Bay Packers 4-3, 8:30 kickoff at Lambeau Field. And the Buffalo Sabres hit the road for a couple of games, wrapping up their two-game road trip Saturday in Dallas with a 5-1 loss. Sabres practicing today at Harbor Center. Tomorrow night, Sabres will host the Washington Capitals in a nationally televised game at 7 o'clock. The Sabres interested in how Rasmus Ristolainen progresses. He left Saturday's game with an upper body injury. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones coming to you from our One Buffalo studio. Thanks to those of you tuned in on the radio side on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Those of you watching on television on MSG, joining us on the line right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a regular guest with us who's here to talk about the business side of football. Happy to have Andrew Brandt from the mmqb.si.com website, covers the business aspect of the NFL. Andrew, John Murphy, and Donald Jones, thanks for being with us here today. We appreciate it.
John and Donald, always a pleasure to jump in.
You working in that front office of Green Bay years ago, had you ever seen or even heard of a trade deadline day like we had last Tuesday?
Not only hadn't, but Ron Wolf, the GM at the time, I was there for a lot of years, and I used to put these proposals in front of the league to encourage trading. We said, there's no buzz like there is in baseball and basketball. Let's make it happen. Couple things. One, move it back, not just 2 weeks like they've done, but move it back to Thanksgiving, after Thanksgiving, to make it a real deadline and make it a real fun, buyers, sellers, all those kind of things. And the response we got in so many words was, we don't want that. We don't want the rent-a-player for the stretch run that baseball had at that time. At that time, I remember, like, Roger Clemens would show up in August, you know, and these kind of things, and they didn't want that. The other proposal was more along my lines, running the business side. I said, let teams trade cap room. So, for instance, you got right now, you got teams, the two worst teams in the league, Cleveland and San Francisco, lead the league in cap room. Maybe they could get some good players. And then you got teams like Pittsburgh and others that have zero cap room. And let it happen. Well, of course, they didn't want that either. They wanted teams to be stuck and make their bed with bad cap management. They can't, you know, get out of it. So that's in the past. What happened yesterday, or last week, was really, I just sort of chalk it up to relationships. Certainly Howie Roseman in Philly and Mike Tannenbaum in Miami. I grew up with these guys in the business, cap managers when we started. There's no two closer people in the league, so they made deals. They've made deals before with Ajay. Buffalo and Carolina, you guys are so aware of the relationships there, make a deal at the deadline. There weren't a lot of trades, but you saw that some bigger names being traded, and every time you knew what was going into it.
Let me get back to circle back to your proposal. Are you saying teams would trade like an asset, a player, or a, say a future draft pick in exchange for cap money?
Yeah, like... You know, look at the 49ers right now. They got like $30 million, $40 million of cap room. So they get a good player. And, you know, they give that team $10 million of cap room. It just made sense to me, and more so now than before, because you know, this gets into a whole CBA deficiency, which I've talked about, and I could talk forever about. Teams are getting away with murder. I mean, they are you're leaving $30-40 million of cap room on the table every year, taking it to the next year, not using it again, taking it to the next year, not using it again. And there should be ways to mandate them using that.
Now, I think I like the idea of moving the deadline back till after Thanksgiving. And I think, you know, the NFL, as they see, we all know the NFL is about, you know, ratings and money. And so when you talk about making it fun, you know, I mean, that would be fun to move it back behind Thanksgiving. And now you have some teams that are really in the playoff race. They need a player. And all of a sudden, you see some bigger moves made, you know, to try to make that team better or help that team get into the playoffs. And that would be good for the league and its ratings.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the buyer-seller aspect. And we had that, I think, in the two trades we talked about. Philadelphia obviously making a run and pick up a good running back. And Dwayne Brown going to Seattle, which mm-hmm. is their crying need. And you could even say that about the Bills getting Benjamin. You know, it's just that more of that would happen if we were in late November instead of the beginning.
On the line with Andrew Brandt from the MMQB, weekly columnist for them on the business of the NFL. I have another trade question for you. And some of us here, now the trade is almost a week and a half old, but some of us here were scratching our heads when Marcell Dareus was traded, just kind of thinking about what would Jacksonville, why would they want to assume that money, that cap hit? What did you think of that trade from a cap perspective, from a business perspective?
Well, yeah, that's one that really struck out to me because you and I haven't talked, you know, about this deal years ago. But one of the more striking, startling deals in the history of the NFL, to see that kind of money given to a guy who's had issues before the deal. I learned in doing contracts for so long, the one truism is this. When a guy's got issues, money doesn't make them better.
Right.
They make them worse.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, that's a trade with eyes wide open because the Jags take on a big contract and a guy with some past problems, but it's a whatever, fifth-round pick. And then you look at it and you sort of look at it as I do and say, okay, I get it. You know, that's not the value for that player. But that player has baggage. The real financial hit was to the Bills because this extraordinary amount of dead money coming on that cap simply by trading him. It would have been the same if they released him. It's just an extraordinary measure for the Bills to take on that mistake. I think it's something like $14 million of cap room that there's going to be sitting there next year. He'll be their highest cap charge.
Hmm. But they clearly wanted to get rid of him.
Yeah, I mean, there's no cash. I mean, no cash is going to be spent
right.
anymore, but the cap is going to be sitting there, and that's what happens when you have new regimes.
Yeah.
They get rid of the guys that were there before, and you take on cap problems.
Cutting him as opposed to trading him would have been a bigger problem for the Bills cap-wise, right?
Same thing. Same exact result, yeah.
Wow.
Doesn't matter.
Hmm.
All right, Andrew, I got to get to you. We're going to jump fully into this one. Murph didn't want to touch this one. He's grown tired of it. This whole Ezekiel Elliott case and what is going on with this case.
It's lawyers in love, it looks like to me, Andrew.
Yeah, Bill, you know my thing. There will be lawyers and billable hours.
Yeah.
They're the winners in all this. As simple as I can say it, I think this is the last hearing for this year. Three judges on the Second Circuit are going to hear this. We've just heard it's going to be Thursday. And here's the result. It's going to be either, listen, there's a big case going forward, but during the prelim to the case, is he suspended or is he not? And that's what's going to be decided on, well, I shouldn't say decided, heard on Thursday. Hopefully they'll decide by Friday, and that'll be the end of the question mark for this year. But as you guys know, he's playing, and they keep putting it off. I think he'll be suspended. Now, whether that happens this year or after a trial, which I think would go in the NFL's favor next year, I just think he's going to be suspended. But, you know, Cowboys fans can debate whether it's better now or later.
Well, what's the the odds that his attorneys, Ezekiel Elliott's and the Cowboys' attorneys, are just putting it off. Like, this is their strategy. Let's delay as long as we can and maybe pay the price next season.
Yeah, and maybe Brandt's wrong. I mean, maybe they go to court, and unlike Tom Brady case, which I think is far-fetched, but unlike Tom Brady, they believe they have better facts and can win. And he never is suspended. But I just think you're dealing with the same court, Second Circuit, that Brady, and it's going to be hard to get a ruling in favor. So I think the lawyers are just looking at it, let's delay, and who knows, maybe win.
Now, you said this is the last time he's going to go to court this year. So there's no possibility that, you know, he's not suspended right now, but then you get closer to the playoffs and all of a sudden he's back in court and he gets suspended for the playoffs or something like that.
I don't think so. I mean, again, they probably may not rule this week, so he'll play against Atlanta. And then what is it? I think they got 7 games left after that or 6. I don't know, but it would go right up to the end of the season. You know, as someone in Philadelphia keeps telling me, this is, you know, it's the Eagles' miraculous year. He's going to be suspended for 6 games that include 2 against the Eagles.
Andrew Brandt joins us about the business of the NFL. Another interesting court case, Colin Kaepernick, his collusion case. What are we to make of these owners and, I guess, the commissioner having to give statements for this? This is typically routine, right? You'd expect that that would happen, or is there something more afoot here, Andrew?
Yeah, it is routine, and again, I know the names draw a lot of attention, but this is what collusion cases do. They ask for records, documents, depositions of the decision-makers, and the decision-makers are owners and the commissioner, and maybe, I don't know if they're going to try to depose the president, but, you know, that's what's at stake here. I really think this is all about trying to get signed. And if an owner team GM says, come on in, suit's over. So I just think this is a way that he and his lawyer can hopefully leverage a signing. Because I think if he's signed, everything goes away. And I also think the media attention on this story goes away.
Yeah.
Once he's signed, he's a backup quarterback. No one's talking about him.
Is there any reason to believe he will be signed, though? I mean, look at all the quarterback injuries and quarterback replacements we've had so far this year.
I know. And you can make an argument he's, quote-unquote, better than a lot of them. Listen, I don't know what's in the hearts and minds of these owners and GMs. You could make an argument that Colin hasn't played good football in a long time. You can make an argument that he's better than these guys. For whatever reason, he's not getting signed. And I know coaches, when pressed, they'll talk about familiarity with the system and blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, that's the question.
And we talked about this with you a couple of weeks ago, Andrew. You can say that about, you know, people might even have reservations, but there's a long way, a great distance between that and proving collusion among teams, right?
Right. And listen, the lawyer, Garagos, so he's represents celebrities. He's very out front saying he's got a smoking gun. Well, to me, if he had a smoking gun, you know, he wouldn't be taking all these depositions because that's where it's going to come out. But he also has said, I think I saw a report last week, that Colin's going to be signed in the next 10 days, and obviously that hasn't happened. No. So we'll see.
Andrew, and going back to what you were saying, if he's signed, this all goes away. I felt like if he was signed back in the beginning of the season, I mean – he had already stated that he wasn't going to take a knee for the anthem or anything like that anymore.
Right.
We wouldn't really be talking about any of the stuff that we've talked about this year in terms of the anthem and the protests and all of that stuff.
Yeah, and I just thought that was the time, you know, and I remember that day in February, he said it. And I'm thinking, okay, free agency starts in a couple weeks. He opted out of his deal. Let's get that straight. The 49ers didn't want him. Some people keep saying he opted out of a deal he had.
They were going to cut him.
Yeah. So I just thought that was the time. And then you move into the spring and everybody's all set. So then the time came with all the injuries. And you see what happened with the Jay Cutlers of the world and everyone else. And listen, I don't have a great explanation why he's not signed.
Andrew, I have a question for you about, you know, Roger Goodell has been asked to provide a deposition for that case, but bigger picture for Roger Goodell, the story that came out at ESPN a couple of weeks ago about the, I guess, somewhat contentious owners meeting in New York City, and the future of Goodell, which is now, you know, I think a month or two ago, most of us thought, well, they're going to get this done. He's going to get his extension. Is there reason to believe that that might not happen based on that report coming out of the owners meeting a couple of weeks ago?
I continue to hear the only issue is structure of the extension, not whether he gets one or not. I continue to hear that Jerry Jones has been leading the charge for, we're not just going to give him $30-plus million. We're going to structure it. And it makes sense because you got these two key items coming up, the broadcast deals and the CBA. And I don't know how you do it, but you got to incentivize him on those things, and I think that's the way to do the contract. I have not heard anything about him not getting an extension. Having said that, that ESPN article was concerning. The McNair comments, forget about the inmates, just a sense that they didn't like the way the senior league executives were handling things. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. And I don't know if it was in that article, but some other report of owners getting on a conference call about it, that's concerning. But I think that's a big leap to not giving him a deal.
I came across, you probably have seen this, I came across an interesting theory, I guess, over the weekend about Roger Goodell in his history, in his personal history. You know, his father, Senator
right.
Charlie Goodell from right down the road here in Jamestown, basically died on his sword to oppose the Vietnam War. Some people speculate that maybe that's what Commissioner Goodell is ready to do when it comes to the NFL and cracking down on players. Is that far-fetched?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I just think it's – I've covered him. I've worked under him. I just think I've called him the conduct commissioner. I think when we look back in 50 years, that'll be the hallmark of Roger Goodell's tenure. He's the conduct guy. And I don't – you know, a lot of things from NFL come from ownership. I don't think this is one. Hmm. Obviously, with Jerry Jones talking about his player didn't do anything wrong. I just think this is something where – it's in his heart. He really believes in role modeling. He's all about conduct, and we can debate it, but that's him.
Very interesting. Andrew, thanks for this. We always learn a lot when you come on the show with us. Thanks very much.
Enjoy it, guys. Thanks.
Andrew Brandt is the weekly columnist on the business of the NFL for the MMQB. You can find it online, mmqb.si.com, the host of the Business of Sports podcast. I mean it. I learn a lot. And this theory, I just came across it, I think, last night. This theory that Goodell knows what it's like to go down on principle and that maybe, because of his family history, that maybe he is leaning in that direction. No, I'm not giving up on being, as Andrew says, the conduct commissioner. And if you guys don't, you owners don't want to back me up, then fine, we'll walk away.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but the concept that that might happen, I find fascinating.
Man, you think he'd walk away from being a commissioner and, what, $30-plus million dollars a year and all of that stuff?
I mean, I'd be stunned, but I wouldn't put it past him. I've talked to him. This is not – I have talked to the commissioner about his history and his father's history, who in, I think it was 1968, 69, 70, you know, was so adamantly opposed to the president position on the war in Vietnam that he came out as a Republican, came out, spoke against it, and they crushed him. Nixon and his guys crushed him, found a way to get him beat. The next time.
That would shock me if he walked away from everything. Because he wants to be the conduct commissioner and he wants his position on conduct. And all. I understand him taking a strong stance on it, but to walk away from that job, that would shock me.
We'll see. All right. Hey, we're talking about more daily issues here with the Buffalo Bills, and we are at the midway point of the season. We want to hear from you about your view of the midway point of the season for the Bills, and in particular, our Twitter poll deals with the offensive MVP for the Buffalo Bills at midseason. Who do you think it'll be? It's our Twitter poll. We'll talk with you about it on the phone at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Who's the Bills' midseason offensive MVP? Right now on Twitter, 42% of you say you think it's quarterback Tyrod Taylor. 32% of you say LeSean McCoy, 18% have somebody else in mind, 8% say tight end Charles Clay. If you have a thought on that, give us a call at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. It's kind of hard to identify an offensive MVP.
It is. This offense
not because
hasn't
the Bills
been.
Have been bad. They haven't. But there hasn't been one real standout. I guess it is Tyrod.
You know, the offense itself has – I won't say it's been bad, but it hasn't really been good either. You know, it hasn't been consistently good, at least. You could say that. And you also don't have players that have been consistently good week in and week out either, right? Mm-hmm. So it's hard to really put an offensive MVP. I think you would have to go with the quarterback just because he's dealt with injuries, you know, and he's played okay through those injuries. He seems to be going up, you know. He seems to be getting better, but he's played through not having his guys on the field. Now he's going to get his guys back, you know, and the team sits at 5-3, and that's a plus. But you don't have anybody who's been consistent on the offensive side of the ball. Like, nobody has been consistent on the offensive side of the ball. And so it's hard to do an MVP.
Yeah, maybe at the end of the year it's somebody like Kelvin Benjamin, our guest in the first hour of the show, who is only going to get a half season in with the Buffalo Bills. He got in his first real practice with the Bills today, earlier this afternoon. And after that workout, Bills offensive coordinator Rick Dennison spoke to the media, and he was asked what Kelvin Benjamin might bring to the Buffalo offense.
He's a big receiver. You know, we just started, but he'll be on the field. He'll get a chance to make some catches and make some plays for us.
What's realistic just in terms of the balance you have to strike between what he's absorbed and what you want to draw up?
Well, that's a little early to tell. I mean, certainly we'll go with the base stuff, what everybody else knows that we've been doing in training camp. And I know Phil's been working with him and Chad's been working with him since he's been here. And we'll go from there.
Is the idea just to have him kind of master the game plan this week, master the game plan next week as best he can?
Well, I think the verbiage would... you know, the way we base everything we do is on concepts anyway. So if he understands a concept, it'll carry over from week to week. So
essentially, as Brandon Bean said, I mean, he's open when he's covered.
Yeah, he's so long. I mean, just watching him when he's played throughout the league, he's made some great contested catches, and you know, that can't help but hurt. I mean, help or whatever, and that'll help us.
Sorry, Coach. How much does his being that matchup that teams have to account for kind of filter down and maybe open up other areas?
Well, that's yet to be seen. Hopefully that will help, you know, help us certainly spread the ball around. And like I said, we're just getting to know him and watching tape with him and getting him to understand what we wanted to try and do.
What goes into the process of getting a guy like that ready in such a short period of time?
Well, certainly have to tell him where to be, formations, and then getting him in the right framework as far as this is the concept, this is how we're teaching it, and you know, the routes, I'm sure he's run similar routes just looking at a tape, but what we call it, you know, the route technique and how we do it, and then getting him to play with the rest of the guys. You know, he's one of 11, so it's still gonna be all 11 out there gonna make plays.
What was the feedback from Coach McGay, you know, when he was doing all the cram sessions with him all the
time?
Well,
no, he's done a good job. You know, but he's a pro. He's been around. He understands what it takes to play and to win. So he's been a good program. Obviously, Carolina does a great job. So I feel good about that.
Tyrod was talking about this last week. Just getting points early in games has been just kind of a stumbling block for you guys.
Sure.
Have you been able to put your finger on what's kind of held them up early in games?
No, not really. It's just me looking more film, I guess. I got to go through it. I told the players I feel bad about the way we started on some of the games. I got to watch it four times as opposed to two. I got to just keep watching and coming up and getting all the input I can from all the staff and getting in a routine, a rhythm early in games.
Is that how it works for you, Coach? Like maybe that third or fourth time something strikes you and then the lightning bolt?
It can't hurt.
What do you think Traveras can
Well, again, just, you know, my exposure with him is catching a lot of balls in New Orleans. Does a good job in routes and just getting to know him also. So, you know, we'll practice and we'll see and see where he goes. Obviously, he's been around a system that's done some really good things and I'm sure most of the concepts will make sense to him. It may be called something else, but it may make some sense. So see what his exposure is and see what transpires with that.
Rick, have you identified what may have contributed to all those sacks that you gave up and what how the running game got kind of stuck in?
A lot of things contribute to that. We just didn't play very well in general concepts, technique, the same thing that's happened. We got to go back to drawing board and work hard and come up with the right formula to make it work this week.
Coach Rick Dennison there talking about adding, you know, Kelvin Benjamin and Deontay Thompson to the lineup and still trying to get used to those guys. But Kelvin Benjamin in particular, Murph, there were a lot of questions there about Kelvin Benjamin and how do you get him acclimated into this offense. I think the questions really should be about Tyrod Taylor and how he gets acclimated with a Kelvin Benjamin and getting Tyrod Taylor to understand this dude's not going to always be open. Yeah. You got to throw it to him. You know, give him a chance. If you give him a chance, he's going to make plays for you. Those are the questions that really should be asked.
Yeah, and that, let's be honest, has not been Tyrod's strong suit.
Right.
A, you know, breaking in quickly with new receivers. Mm-hmm. I think we had some of that at the beginning of this year. And B, throwing it to guys who are covered. You
right.
know? Not necessarily anticipation throws. And it seems to me throws to Kelvin are going to be a little bit different. Like maybe he looks he looks like he's covered, but you put it up high and all of a sudden.
As a, put it somewhere where he can get it, nobody else can
yeah.
get it. And he can get it.
Yeah.
You know, so put it where he can get it, nobody else can get it. And let's see if he can make the play for you. And if he makes that play, like, don't be scared to put the ball up for him. Tyrod, yeah. we haven't seen him do that since he's been here. He had Sammy Watkins who he could throw the ball down the field to. But he didn't have a big, tall receiver you can just throw the ball up to. He goes up there and gets it for you. We just had Kelvin Benjamin on the show, and I talked about, you know, when he said, yeah, Tyrod has those floaters, you know, and I said, man, sometimes that ball doesn't come out of the sky. And he's like, you just got to go up there and get it for him,
yeah.
you know. Tyrod has to understand that. He can go up there and get the ball for you.
Just two interceptions. Maybe there should be more, all right, for Tyrod. Two interceptions in the first eight games.
At least you know he's you know, trying to make some throws
yeah.
that, you know, he normally hasn't tried to make in the past.
There's a call from Jack in Rochester. Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
Hi, John. How are you and Donald doing this afternoon?
Okay. Good. Thank you.
I had a question for Donald.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a difference in the type of schemes and techniques that defensive backs would use to cover a bigger guy like Kevin versus a smaller, quicker guy like Dante?
Yeah, there are different techniques that you're going to use. First of all, it depends on you as the DB. If you are any DB, if you're facing a guy like Kelvin Benjamin, certain guys want to get their hands on those guys because they feel like they're not as fast, they're not as quick, and so they rather just hold you up at the line of scrimmage. And then there's also going up and getting the ball, you know, and you play that a certain way when you're playing a big, taller guy than when you're playing a shorter guy. See, a guy like Kelvin Benjamin is going to jump up and try to get the ball. Like, he's going to go up and get it. You probably can't jump up there with him and try to make that play, so you have to get it when he's coming down. A shorter guy is going to want to let that ball just come down into his breadbasket. He might try to go up and get it, but for the most part, these shorter guys, they're fast. They want to let that ball come down, so you have to play that totally different.
Interesting technique. All right. Hey, we're eight games in, eight games to go. We know the schedule, what it looks like, who's coming up. Donald and I are going to come back and talk a little bit about what we know about this Bills team, this 2017 Bills team after the first eight games, and what we still have to figure out. There's a lot. I think my list of things I still don't know is quite larger than my
yes,
list of things I know.
Exactly.
But we'll talk about that. You can join us as well when we return. The John Murphy Show, coming to you from One Bills Drive. We're presented by Napa Auto Parts, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive. Bills wrapped up practice about an hour and 15 minutes or so ago. Kelvin Benjamin, first real practice for the team. Zay Jones, no practice today. He is day-to-day with his knee. Doesn't appear to be a serious thing. We'll talk more with Chris Brown coming up at 2 o'clock about that. Charles Clay, E.J. Gaines, also day-to-day, both progressing, but neither one of them practiced today. That's kind of the capsule update of what happened in practice today. Talking to you about the Bills at midseason. And I want to get into this discussion, Donald. Look, the more I'm it's just me. I'm going to the more I'm around this team, in this franchise, I always feel like expect the unexpected. I always feel like you don't really know what you think you know. And we kind of counsel, I think, some of our listeners on that when they say, well, there's no way they'll beat this team and this team next week, or there's no way the defense is going to be better this year. Well, sometimes you don't know. And we thought it'd be a good idea.
All the time you don't know.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
I'll settle for most. We thought it'd be a good idea here at the midway point of the season to kind of talk about what we know, what we really feel confident in saying about the 2017 Bills, and some of the things that we still have to figure out. So let's get into that a little bit. What we know. Let's start with what we know to be true about the 2017 Buffalo Bills. You think you have a pretty good
yeah,
handle
I think
on a couple of these things.
I think you're going to disagree with this one, but – I think we know who Tyrod Taylor is, you know. And I think that, you know, he's shown over a period of 2.5 years now who he is as a quarterback and what he does good when he's at his best. I think we know that he needs to have weapons around him, guys that he trusts, guys that have been on the field with him for a couple of years, at least since going back to the spring, you know.
Yeah.
And I think we all know that, you know, a 180 to 250-yard game out of Tyrod Taylor, a touchdown throwing and a touchdown rushing is like a very good game for Tyrod Taylor.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but there's something. Now, Tyrod started 37 games for the Bills, and I do count that first game a couple of years ago as a start.
Mm-hmm.
37 games. I think we have a good handle on what he does well. You know, he doesn't put the ball up for grabs, doesn't throw interceptions. He makes plays on the run and can pick up good yardage for you in the ground game. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. I don't think the book is closed as far as what we know about Tyrod Taylor. Based on the last three games and his last three performances against Tampa Bay, Oakland, and the Jets, whether it's more familiarity with Rick Dennison in the offense or more of a comfort level with the targets, which are changing again coming up in the next week or two,
mm-hmm.
I get the sense that Tyrod is on the cusp of getting a little bit better. I'm not saying dramatic improvement, but a little bit better. Throwing the ball. You remember how the rap used to be, well, he doesn't throw over the middle because mm-hmm. he can't see. When's the last time anybody
yeah,
really
man,
thought
said that? Yeah, I said that in a while.
Because he throws over the middle.
Right.
When's the last time anybody said, well, you know, there's a whole litany of things that people thought they knew about Tyrod after his first year starting, second year starting. Now he's 2.5 years in. I'm just leaving a little bit wiggle room here because I think he has improved and it's shown up and hasn't really, you know, shown up statistically,
mm-hmm.
but it's shown up in the way he plays over the last three games. And I'm encouraged that there might be another half step above level for Tyrod Taylor to hit. I think he might be hitting it now.
I think he's improved in terms of his efficiency. In terms of throwing the ball, he's improved in that area. And yeah, we do still have to figure out, you know, what's going to happen with this new receiver in Kelvin Benjamin, now getting Charles Clay back. You know, what's he going to do? He has a lot of weapons on the field now to get the ball to. So how does he handle that? How does he spread the ball around to all of these guys, who he goes to in certain situations, things like that. But I think – we know who he is in terms of not wanting to throw the ball. I mean, not wanting to turn the ball over.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of how much, you know, yardage to expect out of Tyrod Taylor is a good game for Tyrod Taylor, knowing that he can get out of the pocket, knowing just how he plays the game. I think we pretty much know, in my opinion, we know who he is.
Here's a call. I want to work in a call here. I think Mark is on the line who has some thoughts on this particular topic. Mark, you think Tyrod may be surrounded by better weapons than he was a year ago, maybe?
Hi, guys. I don't know about better, but I when you look at it compared, I mean, we've had so much talk about how weak our wide receiver group is, our receiver group as a whole, pretty much all year long since Sammy was traded. But if you look at the group now, you've basically changed out Goodwin for Zay Jones. You've changed out Woods for Matthews. And now we've really replaced Sammy with Benjamin. And what you lose with Sammy on the deep threat, I think you gain with Benjamin in those short to medium routes. I mean, how much bigger target can you get and talented guy to go get that ball?
Yeah,
right.
So, I mean, I think we're at least comparable to where we were talent-wise. Now, I know we're in the middle of the season, and there's some familiarity that's got to go into it with Benjamin. But the rest of the guys have been here for a while. And you throw Clay – I mean, when we put Clay in that mix – and then you throw that off pass once in a while to O'Leary. I think we got a good group of guys who can do damage to defenses. So I put this on Tyrod. The next eight games, I'm not expecting him to come out and throw for 300 yards. Maybe not in any of the games the rest of the year. But I think the arrow has to start pointing up week to week to week as to how threatening we are.
Yeah, I would submit, Mark, that the arrow has pointed up the last 3 weeks for Tyrod Taylor. And that's why, you know, when we talk about we know who he is, I think maybe there's a little bit more to give from Tyrod Taylor. I think we're seeing it a little bit.
You know, I can see the arrow going up, but I still think there's a lot that, you know, we're going to learn about Tyrod Taylor.
He's not going to be a 300-yard passer.
No.
He's not going to, you know, fling it all over the field.
Right.
But he does other things that are pretty good.
He does do other things that are pretty good, but I still think, you know, let's see what he does with Kelvin Benjamin. Because he's a different type of receiver, you know, and he's you're not going to be able to just wait until this guy comes open. Like, you're going to have to give him opportunities. Let's see if Tyrod Taylor now pulls that trigger and gives him those opportunities.
What we know about the Bills at midseason, let me throw this one out there, Donald.
Throw
think
it.
We know that the Bills special teams are pretty good, verging on really good. And Hauschka has been sensational through the first half season with the long-range field goals and the consistent field goals. I think Colton Schmidt's had several good games in a row. The coverage teams look pretty solid. I think I'm comfortable saying we know right now that the Bills special teams is improved over last year and is pretty good in the league.
I think I'd agree with you there. Hauschka's been house money, as I think you've said on air a couple of times. Colton Schmidt has had some good games. Now, we know when we're talking about your punter having good games, that means something's not going right on the offensive side of the ball. But he has had those good games, some very good punts, pinning teams down, and all of the things that they're asking him to do. The coverage teams have been pretty good. They've had some breakdowns, but it's going to happen every now and then. It happens, especially when you're facing guys that are very good, like Cordarrelle Patterson and those guys. They can sometimes get loose. The interesting thing, and this could go, we could put this one in the other category we're going to talk about. What we still have to figure out is if Brandon Tate's always going to be up or not. He goes into the special teams, and we know he's good. We know he's one of the best in the league, most consistent in the league. You're not talking about this guy's dangerous, can take it to the house, but he's consistent at catching the ball, number one, and getting you good yardage and creating good field position for your team. But for some reason, he hasn't always been up. He has those games where he's inactive. And so I think that's something we still have to figure out, if he's going to be a key part of the special teams moving forward, or if he's going to be up and down week in and week out.
If they went with this lineup every game day lineup, these five receivers, Kelvin Benjamin, Jordan Matthews, Zay Jones, Deontay Thompson, Brandon Tate, keep them healthy.
That would be good.
Keep them going. I'm good. Don't touch it. I know you have individual things and matchups that you want to exploit, but that's my five.
That's my five, yeah. Those are the five, and they all need to be up.
Yeah.
They all need to be up because Brandon Tate is a guy who can step in on offense for you and make plays like we saw him do in the Oakland game, but we know what he can do in the return game, and I think they all those five of those guys need to be up.
Talking about what we know about the 2017 Bills, we've got a couple of more issues to talk about in that regard, what we know about this team, and we'll do that when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Thanks for coming back. Good to be with you. John Murphy, Donald Jones. The Bills coming off their mini bye, getting set for the New Orleans Saints. Six straight wins coming in here Sunday, 1 o'clock kickoff, New Era Field. We're here until 3. Chris Brown's going to join us in the next hour. Right now we're talking about what we know, what we really know deep in our hearts about the 2017 Buffalo Bills. We've gone through a couple of things here as we assess the Bills at midseason. How about this, Donald? And I firmly believe this, and this is a surprise based on what we thought. I guess kind of comparing what we thought back in August.
We are where we thought we were. No, go ahead.
What we know, the path to the playoffs is wide open in the AFC. It absolutely is wide open, and that might be the most significant and maybe the best development for the Bills for the first half of the season, the fact that they've made it through some tough games. I know somebody called and said, well, they haven't beaten anybody. Well, they beat some pretty decent teams, and they've got a lot more to come and hopefully some more winning to do. But the path to the playoffs is wide open for the Bills with all of those, especially because 8 games left, 7 of them in the AFC, and 4 of them in the AFC East. The door is open for them to do something here.
You look at it right now, the Bills sit in the last wild card spot. But you do, and I said this earlier, you have a lot of teams who are right around – the same in terms of talent. Now, you look at Pittsburgh and New England, they look like the two teams that, we thought they were going to be in the beginning of the season. Kansas City started out strong, but now they're on, a 3-game losing streak or something like that. Maybe they might have lost 2 games in a row, something like that. And they're not looking like I thought early in the season, Kansas City is the best team in the AFC, and
but
that's –
they look like who we thought they'd be, going into the season?
Kansas City?
Yeah,
now.
Record right now.
Now, but they started out hot. They started out looking like this team is really, really good, now we're seeing them lose some games. The rest of the teams in the AFC are just it's wide open. You have teams that will win one game, then they'll lose a game. They might win 2 games, then lose a game. You don't really have the rest of the teams, a team that's stepping up saying we want these spots in the playoffs or something like that. You don't have consistent teams out there. That's the biggest thing. You don't have consistency overall in the AFC. You have teams losing games that they shouldn't lose, and they beat teams that they shouldn't beat, you know, and it's just crazy to see how this whole thing is playing out.
I do believe we know now that the path to the playoffs is wide open and that it is there for the Bills, and it sounds like Sean McDermott told his team that today when he said everything we want is still in front of us. Part of that because not just how the Bills have played, but because of
the rest
how
of the team. I think we also know the path to the playoffs in terms of Sean McDermott and this team. And their model is you win at home, you know. And that's really every team's model, but that you can see, you know, and we're going to get to this and what we still have to learn about this team. But their path to the playoffs is you win your games at home. You got to win a couple of games on the road. But if you win your games at home, which they're still undefeated at home, you win. Let's say you go undefeated at home, you know. Now you just got to win a few games and you'll find yourself in the playoffs.
And that is the fourth and final thing about what we know about the Bills in midseason. The home field advantage is back for the Bills, I believe, 4-0 at home and big wins. And really just the atmosphere and the crowd and the noise at New Era Field has been spectacular. No reason why that should not continue through the second half of the schedule with the home games against the New Orleans Saints and then against the Patriots and Colts and Dolphins. Four games left, two of them against division rivals at home. Saints should be a big game this week. The Colts, I mean, why wouldn't it continue? Yeah, Bills have their home field advantage back again, and darn it, it's been a long time returning, but I think it's back. I do. I think it's important, too.
It's very important. It's important in the term in Sean McDermott's eyes, I think this team's eyes. You want to have your games at home. When you look at the teams that they have to play here, starting with this week the Saints, you saw it with the Oakland Raiders. They weren't ready to come and play in the weather here in Buffalo. In the cold, it was rainy that day. I don't know what the weather's looking like it's going to be on Sunday, but I think I'd rather play the Saints here in Buffalo with the crowd going crazy, with the wind, if it's raining, whatever
it's a
dome
team. They're a dome team.
Exactly. I think I'd rather play them here than to have to play them down in that dome in New Orleans.
And for the record, as far as the Chiefs are concerned, they've lost three of their last four. They lost at home to the Steelers. They lost on the road at Oakland. They beat the Broncos, and then, of course, they just lost at Dallas yesterday, right? So three of their last four.
Chiefs. Okay, three of their last four.
Yeah. It's not a collapse, but it's interesting, especially based on the way they started. Those are some of the things we know about the Buffalo Bills. Well, there's some other things that we're still going to find out, but we have to learn, and we're going to get to that in the third and final hour of the show. Chris Brown may help us along with that, too, the Bills insider from BuffaloBills.com. Standing by to join us in studio next. You can phone in your questions and comments for Chris Brown. In particular, we'll get his thoughts on the offensive MVP, and you may want to weigh in on that, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive. The Bills wrapped up practice about an hour and a half ago as they get back to work on this Monday. After the weekend off, they're gearing up for this Sunday's game against the New Orleans Saints. No practice today for wide receiver Zay Jones. He is still day-to-day with his knee injury, although it sounds like the Bills expect they might be able to get him back this week. Charles Clay, E.J. Gaines, both of them day-to-day, both progressing, but held out today. Clay got some work in on the side. E.J. Gaines got in some individual position drills with the defensive backs. Calvin Benjamin at his first practice today, his first full practice with the Bills. He joined us on the show earlier on. You can hear that interview on our website at BuffaloBills.com. Bills players off tomorrow. They return Wednesday to pick up the pace and get ready for the Saints. Bills signed a running back over the weekend to replace the injured Tywan Jones. They signed Travaris Cadet, 28 years of age, signed by the Jets and then released by the Jets on October 24th. He had short stints with the 49ers, the Patriots, and the New Orleans Saints before that. Originally came into the league, Cadet did, as an undrafted rookie free agent in 2012. And a practice squad move for the Bills today at running back. They signed running back Marcus Murphy, former seventh-round pick of the Saints in 2015, most recently on the Colts practice squad. New York Giants head coach Ben McAdoo does not rule out the possibility of benching quarterback Eli Manning so we can get a look at rookie Davis Webb. Manning has started 207 consecutive games for the New York Giants. The Giants lost miserably yesterday in the Meadowlands, a 51-7 loss to the Rams. Monday Night Football tonight. It is the 3-4 Detroit Lions and the 4-3 Green Bay Packers at Lambeau Field. That's an 8:30 kickoff as the Packers try to make do with Brett Hundley at quarterback. And the Buffalo Sabres back in action tomorrow night. They are home for a game against the Washington Capitals, a nationally televised game that starts at 7 p.m. Sabres wrapped up a two-game road trip Saturday night in Dallas, dug themselves an early hole and wound up losing 5-1. Ryan O'Reilly with Buffalo's lone goal in the Saturday night loss. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, continuing on with the third hour of our show. And joining us in studio, a regular Monday visitor, happy to have Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com, Chris Brown, in studio with us. Hello, Brownie.
How are we doing? A lot of highlighting there, Brownie.
Well, it just kind of helps me compartmentalize stuff. And
okay. It's the way his mind works, the mind of Chris Brown.
We don't want to go there. Don't want to take a deep dive into that one.
Just a short series. We'll be featuring here.
Just a short series.
Yeah.
How'd you spend the bye weekend, Chris?
Well, you know, we had pasta dinner on Sunday night, which was the way to do it. So that was – Sunday was just relaxing. I think we binge-watched the second season of Stranger Things.
Stranger Things.
Which is great. It's kind of like the whole family does that.
Okay.
We're all into that series. So just finished it up last night. So that was good. That was Sunday. Sunday was a lazy day. Saturday got out at Saturday night with the wife. So
you watched the whole season in one day?
No. We only had like the last three or four episodes left. Gotcha. So we just finished it up.
Felt like a bye weekend for us, I think, and for the players, I'm sure as well.
Huh? It worked for me, I'll tell you. And the front end of those Thursday night weeks are just brutal.
Yeah.
And then you're not right Friday because you're back in at work. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what it's like for the players, I got to say.
I tell you this.
I can't believe it.
I think most of those guys got out of town. I was in the airport, and those guys were – they were all in the airport with me.
I mean, we're mentally fried, but they're just physically got to be shot.
I just want to go somewhere to a spa.
I don't think you have to, you know, imagine too much how players feel if you were around Richie Incognito in the locker room Thursday night.
You knew just how they felt, yeah. I think he was a little sore as to how the game went, too. Because, you know, I don't know how you can argue about it and complain about it when everybody's in the same boat. I mean, if you want to say in general for a league, it's, you know, it might be misguided. Go ahead, stand on that soapbox. And I guess to a certain extent he was, but I think it was more a byproduct of his frustration with how the game played out.
I meant to ask Andrew Brandt this, Donald. I forgot about, you know, 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, I would have said, well, Thursday night football's not going away. Now I'm not so sure. You know, when you read about oversaturation and declining ratings, what, 18% drop in ratings over 2 years, I think the league might be open to looking at that. Am I crazy, Chris? What do you think?
If they don't look at it now, they're certainly going to be looking at it when the new CBA comes up in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Because the players, you better believe they're going to be all over eliminating that
and yet, from
the conversation.
The argument will be, okay, are you ready to take an X percent cut in the salary cap and what we're paying you?
Well, that's always the response.
That's always what you dangle out there.
Yeah.
You
know?
And that's where it always – that's where the rubber meets the road in these CBAs, really.
I mean, what are we talking about? How much are they making in terms of revenue on Thursday night?
I don't know, but it's primetime programming, so they're charging primetime advertising rates, so that means they can charge the networks that much more because it's primetime ad revenue is a lot higher than Sunday afternoon.
And they've used Thursdays the last couple of years to put aside the streaming video package, right? Yep. Is it Amazon this year?
Amazon Prime.
That's different this year. They'll find somebody else for next year just to kind of test the
Yahoo
waters.
Yahoo the year before that, doing all the London games, so.
All right, enough about that. Let's talk about practice today. Chris Brown joins us in studio. Kelvin Benjamin, he walked in here and blocked out the light in the doorway when he walked through the door here today.
Yeah.
He's big. He's bigger than I remember.
I got a crick in my neck from interviewing him today, just looking up at him. But, yeah, I mean, gigantic target. Like Brandon Bean said last week after the trade was made, the guy's open even when he's covered because you can just throw it up to him and he'll make a lot of plays on contested passes. So – that's a plus. You want to talk about putting, you know, how Tyrod is a quarterback that really feels like he's got to trust people before he's going to take even the remotest, you know, the most remote risk possible in putting a ball up for somebody to make a play. This is going to be an easy guy to trust right away. I mean, he's just so long. I mean, forget about tall. He's just so long. He's long-limbed. You just throw the ball up, he's going to be the first guy to get a crack at it on any DB in this league, 6'2", 6'3", I don't care.
Chris, everybody's excited about Kelvin Benjamin and how big he is. We're talking about that right now. What are some of his knocks, some of his flaws?
Well, he's not fast. I mean, he's not going to be a guy that's going to get in and out of his breaks in a hurry. Just because he's so long, it's hard for him to drop his weight and get in and out of breaks. So that's not going to happen. You're not going to ask him to do that. You're going to ask him to run a fade route or, you know, run a corner route and out jump the DB for the football.
Right.
That's what he's going to be asked to do, and that's probably smart. And, you know, you can also run those. I mean, I think he's capable of running, you know, one of those inside out routes where he's, you know, coming in and then pulling away and he's shielding. He's going to shield the DB from the football. That's what he's going to do. That's his MO, and that's what they should have him doing. I thought some of his more interesting comments were, and we'll have a feature up this afternoon on BuffaloBills.com on him just getting acclimated to everything, but he was not surprised by the trade, which I thought was pretty eye-opening. He was already getting a sense that the offense in Carolina was headed in another direction, namely away from him. And this was with Olsen out of the lineup, mind you, a guy that has gobbled up a lot of the receiving targets in that offense for several years now. So I thought it was interesting that he felt that way and kind of sensed something was afoot and they were transitioning away from him and maybe towards other targets in the passing game.
That now, it's you can see, you can sense things out there on the field. You know, like you can sense, man, they're starting to play this guy a lot more or they're throwing it to this guy a lot more. And these types of things run through your mind. And then all of a sudden you get cut or traded or something like that. And it's like, oh, all right, now I see what it was.
Deontay
Thompson.
Sense,
yeah, right. Deontay Thompson talked about that here on the show.
Chicago,
you know, he, when he was in Chicago, he could see that something was different, you know. And it's just crazy. So like, as we talked about earlier, how does he feel about the trade? You know, I'm sure deep down inside he does feel a little salty about that trade. You know, if they were ever to go back, well, obviously they will at some point.
Here's the irony of that. He didn't feel salty at all. He didn't even go talk to Herney, the GM down there, to get an explanation. He's like, no, I just hopped on a plane. I was out of there. And the reason why is because of some of the familiar guys he's got here in Buffalo that were on that Carolina roster with him for some time, most notably Joe Webb. Because if you remember, Joe Webb was down there until the Monday before week one.
Yeah.
And then the Bills signed him. They had a couple of quarterbacks with concussions, if you remember, Tyrod and, you know, the third stringer. Who's
Yates.
His name? Thank you, T.J. Yates. And so we, you know, the Bills signed him the Monday before the opener, and he's up here, and he's not here a week, and he's texting with Benjamin how great it is up here. Oh, man, it'd be awesome if you were up here too. This is great, and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I was talking to Joe Webb today in the locker room. He goes, and look what happened.
Yeah.
So he was getting these lines about how much fun he'd have playing up here, this, that, and the other. So he gets traded. He admits initially I was like, you know, because I was drafted here. This is all I know, Carolina Panthers. He goes, but it didn't take me long. He goes, I texted Joe not long after I found out I got traded, and he's like, oh, you're going to love it. It's going to be awesome. So he goes, I didn't even need to talk to Herney, find out why they were trading me. I got on the plane. I'm here, and I'm pumped. Let's go.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com in studio with us. We're talking about Kelvin Benjamin for a minute or two more, Chris. And look, you said it, and Brandon Bean said it a week ago, or, you know, he's open when he's not. He's a big target. Just get him the ball. We all say that. We all kind of know that. Does Tyrod know that? And does he know that enough to act on it in the 0.3 of a second that he'll have to make that decision? You know what I mean? Kelvin Benjamin, I think he's open. But does Tyrod have it in him to pull the trigger and force it down to Kelvin?
That's what has to unfold here.
Right.
And I think there has to be confidence in that connection. And, you know, even Benjamin admitted today, it's something that we've got to work on. But they're out here after practice doing an extra 10, 15 minutes of work, getting an extra 40, 50 passes in. I think Tyrod is a smart enough quarterback to know this guy can be a difference maker for this offense, not from just the perspective of his playmaking ability, but the trickle-down effect that him just being on the field is going to have for everybody else on the offense, whether it's Jordan Matthews being able to just focus on working out of the slot and doing his job there, to Zay Jones going against the team's third corner, not the first or second corner, which should mean more favorable matchups for him, to Shady not seeing 8-9 in the box on every play,
right,
because this guy's got to be accounted for with safety help over the top because he's such a behemoth of a human. There's most corners in the league that aren't going to be able to handle him one-on-one. It's just not going to happen. So the trickle-down effect here, I think, is something that's going to speak to Tyrod, and Tyrod's got to be able to put that on film in this offense. Well, the way you put that on film in this offense is by throwing to the guy.
Right.
So you put it on film for a couple of weeks, this guy's making plays and out-jumping people in the end zone for touchdowns, defensive coordinator is going to be like, oh, crap, we gotta account for this guy. I'd rather have Shady rip off a 12-yard run than give up a 30-yard touchdown to this guy. It's going to shift the focus, and that's on Tyrod to put that focus in the minds of opposing defensive coordinators by going to him in the passing game.
Early in the game, this week, against the Saints. A Saints team that has played him twice a year, you know, since he's been drafted, so they know about Kelvin Benjamin. But they don't know Tyrod's going to go to him, so Tyrod has to put it in their mind. So it's like, all right, he's going to go to him. Let's just go ahead and play him like we played him down in Carolina.
You watch some of those highlights, Kelvin Benjamin. He just beats people up, man. Stiff arms, you know, not people. People come up, defensive backs come up to tackle him, and they're bouncing off him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you better go low on that guy.
I've seen those highlights. I mean, but to see him again, it's like,
he talked on the show with us earlier today about Jordan Poyer when he hit him.
Yeah.
He smacked Kelvin Benjamin in the end zone, and obviously he dropped the ball.
He came out of the game for a little while too.
Poyer felt that. Yeah. Like, man, I just ran into a wall right there, dude. You know, so he's a big body, you know, and he is a guy who can go up and catch the ball. You have to pay attention, but it's all up to the quarterback to get him the ball.
Chris Brown is with us. Want to talk about midseason, where the Bills are at, Chris, because we'll have time to talk about this matchup. But first, before we get to your list, I wonder if you can help us with this, our Twitter poll question. Who's the Bills' midseason offensive MVP? It's a tough call, and I think folks are having a little difficulty with it. Right now on Twitter, with more than 4,000 votes in, 43% of respondents say it's Tyrod Taylor, 32% say it's LeSean McCoy, 17% of our respondents say it's somebody else, 8% say Charles Clay. I'd pick Tyrod, but it's tough to identify one guy as an offensive MVP through these first eight games, isn't it?
I would pick Tyrod based on circumstance. I think at the beginning of the season, knowing how this offense was supposed to operate, everybody would say LeSean McCoy. I mean, in the grand scheme and in an ideal world, he is the engine that runs this offense. We all know that hasn't happened to this point in time. I mean, what are we, halfway through the season, he's averaging 3.7 a carry. That's well below his career average. That's due to a number of factors, not him so much as the offensive line being in flux and a host of other reasons. Lack of production in the passing game, which allows opponents to load up to stop him, and that's what we've seen. I say Charles Clay would absolutely have been a candidate had he not gone out in week five with the injury and missed the last three games. So for that reason, he's off the list. So I think for me, it's Tyrod, and you say, well, how is he any different than he's been the past 2 years? His completion percentage is up. If he finishes with this completion percentage, it'll be the highest single-season completion percentage in his career, just over 65%. His touchdown-interception ratio is 5-1. It's usually somewhere between 3 and 4-1. It's 5-1 right now. That, I mean, I know it's only 10 versus 2, but you can't ignore the ratio.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said for that. And I think, and I don't have the analytics to back this up because I haven't looked it up or dissected it to this degree because I just don't have the time.
Maybe,
I just think he's making.
Should have laid off Stranger Things.
I think he's. Give me a day off, Murph. Come on. I think he's made plays more consistently from the pocket, especially these last three games, than maybe of any other stretch in his career. Now, part of that is predicated on the fact that this offense is geared toward making higher percentage throws, but you can't fault Tyrod's just executing the offense. And you look at last Thursday's game. I mean, he's under duress from start to finish in that game. Mm-hmm. His completion percentage is over 72%. To me, he's made big steps this year in his personal game. I think he's certainly on the right track. I think he's got one of the strongest relationships he's ever had in his career, quarterback to OC. And so I think all of these things are playing a part. And right now, he is your offensive MVP. I think he is.
Well, that gets us into Chris's post, which went up at BuffaloBills.com yesterday. The top 10 things we've learned about the Bills at midseason, and one of them is Tyrod advancing his game under Rick Dennison. Mm-hmm. And I submit, Chris, and Don and I have talked about this, you know, I think we talked about it Friday and again earlier today. It's not even something that's really quantifiable yet, but the types of throws he's attempting and the type of throws he's completing, playing under duress the entire game as he did last Thursday night, I see there's another level here that Tyrod appears to be approaching. You know, and I'm not saying it's a quantum leap. I'm not saying he's going to be, Aaron Rodgers here. But I do think we are witnessing the last three games the next half step in Tyrod Taylor's advancement.
Yeah, I don't think he'll ever be considered in the same breath with people like Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, just because this team doesn't throw the ball enough.
Right.
And he's averaging, what, 219 passing yards a game? I mean, that's just not going to get you on the same plane in terms of being judged as a quarterback in this league as those guys who, you know, pass to win football games. This guy does a lot more than just that. I think you can make the argument that he's one of the more well-rounded quarterbacks or multidimensional quarterbacks in the NFL just by virtue of the fact of all the things he can do and do well. He's not going to be a juggernaut passer. He's not going to have many 300-yard passing games. I think he only has two in his career with the Bills. So that's just not what he's going to be. But what they need him to be is efficient, keep making positive plays. I think that's the biggest change in his game. Early in the season, he would still fall victim to a lot of negative plays. And I know he had some Thursday night, again. But you think about the Carolina game, negative plays. You think about the Cincinnati game, too many negative plays.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to him and asking him this coming out of the bye week. You know, did you notice some of those things and taking sacks and maybe not using your legs because maybe you've got it in your head, I got to be a pocket passer, I got to make more plays out of the pocket, I got to be more consistent with this part of my game. I think he was trying so hard to do that he almost neglected the fact that, you know what, I can get myself out of trouble when I need to.
Right.
I've got to do that a little bit more to help the offense, which is why I did that whole story last week on, you know, when he rushes 7 to 10 times a game, it strikes fear in an opposing defense to the point where they respect other things. The end backs off to hold the outside edge in case he does tuck it and run. The linebacker has to spy. Now you got man-to-man everywhere else on the field. So I think he's – I guess the best way to put this, and this is a long way to get there, I'm rambling, but he has found, I think, the happy medium between using his legs to help keep the team in positive down and distance, manageable down and distance, and making enough plays from the pocket where the opponent has to respect the passing game.
Chris, that's kind of like when people talk for like 5 to 10 minutes about something and then say, to make a long story short. I just mess with you.
Yeah. No. I was rambling. I admitted it. I'll criticize myself before you will. Don't worry about that.
That's a good way to approach life.
Sure.
Chris has written the top things we've learned from the Bills at midseason. Here's a troubling trend, Chris, and it did not get better against the against the Jets. The slow starts. They don't score two field goals in the first quarter in the first eight games, total offensive production. And even coming out after halftime, you know, they will off if they win a toss, they're probably going to defer and look to get the ball at the start of the third quarter. They don't do anything with that possession either.
Right. Yeah, it's troubling. I'm going to take a deeper dive into that this week, see if I can – come up with some more concrete results on Thursday, where I'll try to put a story up on that because we're trying to delve into some more number-related types of things with the team on Thursdays now on BuffaloBills.com. But it's not good. I mean, they've got 6 points in the first quarter this season total over eight games. It's last in the league. I mean, 6 points. So I think what that does right off the bat, it just puts undue pressure on your defense and on your special teams to not get bad field position for the defense. Let's try to get at least a long field if we're punting this early. So now special teams has got to cover well, or Colton Schmidt's got to punt well, and then the defense has to come out and get a stop right away and get the, and even then, second possession, nothing.
Right.
You know, you get two or three possessions a quarter. Those first two or three possessions, they can't seem to get anything going. You could make the argument that their best opening possession of the season was week one against the Jets when they went all the way down the field and then the pass got deflected and intercepted in the end zone, came back the other way. That might be their best opening drive of the season.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's no better in the second half. They come out second half, first possession this season, 7 points the whole year.
And they always get the ball to come out.
Well, most of the time. I think they've lost one coin toss. They lost it Thursday night, but the Jets took the ball, so they ended up getting the ball again to start the second half. But 7 points scored on your first second half possession for the season, that ranked 25th in the NFL going into the weekend. It's probably even lower now after all these teams have played now their eighth games, ninth games, whatever the case might be. And I talked to Coach Dennison about it today. I said, you know, can you put your finger on what's going on here? And he took the heat on himself. He took it off the players. He goes, I don't know. He goes, I've apologized to the players that we haven't been more productive there. And I'm like, well, hold up a second. That's admirable. But you're not the one out there executing the plays.
Yeah.
Coach McDermott, who I asked about, he said it's a rhythm thing. We just can't find a happy rhythm there. Coach Dennison scripts the first 15 plays.
I was just about to say,
on offense. Most
coaches will script the first, however, 15, 20 plays. You know, but when you're starting like this, does it make you go away from that? You know, and let's switch it up and maybe go no huddle or something like that to start the game.
I don't get the sense that they do. I think the script stays the same for the most part. I think when they're talking about rhythm, they're talking about going three and out on the first series, going three and out on the second series. So now you've had the ball twice. You've run six plays. Yeah. I mean, you're not even halfway through that script yet. I mean, there was a couple of games. I want to say the Carolina game. The offense ran 16 plays in the first half. Mm. I mean, that is anemic.
Yeah.
So there are some undercurrents of things that are troubling this team from an offensive perspective. Getting into an early rhythm is one of them. And setting the tone at the start of the first half, the start of the second half offensively, has been a consistent problem through the first half of the season.
And it didn't get any better against the Jets. The first play of the game, he gets sacked. You know, I don't even remember how big of a loss it was, but he's right by the goal line, which switches things.
And they were driving at the end of the first quarter, but the touchdown did not get scored until the second quarter.
Right.
So no points on the board there again. First quarter scoring.
Chris Brown is talking about the things he's learned, the top 5-10 things he's learned from the Bills at midseason. It's a post that he's got up on BuffaloBills.com. Here's one that I think comes into play this week with the Dome team coming to Orchard Park, the Saints with their six-game winning streak, still a Dome team, and coming to what I think has reemerged, really, as one of the more difficult road venues for teams to play in the NFL. I think the Bills have discovered that we like playing at home, and we have a home field advantage.
And that's, you know, despite not jumping on teams early, as we've talked about, the defense has just played remarkably better here. They haven't played poorly on the road, but their play has been more consistent, I think, here at home. 11 of their 17 takeaways on the season have been at New Era Field. You know, they've got points off turnovers to a greater degree at New Era Field. And, you know, I think the crowd has made a difference. I'm not going to deny that for a second either. And point production has been almost double at home than what it's been on the road. The Bills average almost 28 points a game at home this season. On the road, it's just a shade over 15 points a game. I mean, that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
You would expect most NFL teams aren't going to score quite as much on the road as they are at home. But we're talking about a 2-touchdown difference there, guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big gap between home and the road. It's obviously the reason they're 4-0 at home, but it's also the reason they're 1-3, you know, away from New Era Field.
One more to talk about as far as the things you've learned about the Bills at midseason. You're right that the Bills' defense continues to evolve. Did you mean to write devolve?
Well,
I think it's hard to argue that the defense is better now than it was a month ago.
Yeah, I think the problem is we don't know what their true identity or strength is right now.
Yeah.
I think most would have said run defense because it's been in the top 10 up until last Thursday when they gave up 194 yards on the ground. Which is a fat number that's ugly in every way, shape, or form, unless you're the Jets. So you say, well, hold on a second here. What is this team's – what are they going to hang their hat on defensively? And I think a lot of people would just naturally say takeaways. But we saw what happened when that goes away.
Mm-hmm.
I think if the run defense was still top 10 caliber Thursday night, even though they didn't get turnovers, I think it would have been a much closer game. But because they could not keep – the run game of the Jets in check, it snowballed and turned into an ugly contest. So where are we? I don't know where the pass rush has gone. It's disappeared. And I don't think it's going to get healthy anytime soon because you're playing Drew Brees, who is the least sacked quarterback in the NFL this week.
Yep.
You've got Alex Smith, who can run out of trouble. You've got Phillip Rivers, who usually gets the ball out but has been sacked a fair amount. And then Tom Brady, we know, almost never gets sacked. So I don't expect the pass rush getting healthy anytime soon unless they start drawing up a lot more pressures and sending five, sometimes six, instead of just relying on the front four because the front four is not getting it done right now. So that's that. Let's put that on the side. I think what they're going to have to hang their hat on is run defense here. They're going to really have to work to stop the run, but then you look at the next four quarterbacks they're facing, you're like, well, wait a second.
Yeah.
Is that going to be enough? I don't know if it is. You're going to have to stop the run and continue to get turnovers and start piling up sacks and setting up long down distance situations, or tell your offense to get a lead right early in the game and work off of that.
You need that, because you talk about drawing up pressures. These quarterbacks, starting with the Saints and Drew Brees, will eat you up if you're blitzing.
Mm-hmm.
If he figures out where you're blitzing from, he will eat you up.
I mean, he's a guy that even beats eight-man coverage. Yeah. I mean, you could drop eight, and he's still going to find somebody.
Right.
He's just – he's that good. He's really – he's a special quarterback. And, you know, he doesn't get the exposure up here because we don't see a lot of NFC South matchups. He's just a special talent. He's I don't know. I know Brady gets a lot of credit and everything. Breeze is right there. I think he's right there with
him. Hall of Famer.
5,000-yard seasons, like, all the time, like it's nothing. I'm amazed that at 6 feet tall, he can put it on somebody as well as he can, whether it's dropping it over a linebacker and under a safety, putting it on the money on a guy that's in coverage on a back shoulder, just at 40 yards down the field. He's a special talent. He really is.
All right. We'll have a lot of time to talk about Drew Brees and the Saints as the week rolls along. Chris, thanks for coming in here today.
We appreciate it.
Check it out online, Chris Brown's story at BuffaloBills.com. The top 10 things we've learned about the Bills at midseason. When we come back, Donald and I, we talked about what we've learned about the Bills, what we know about the Bills. What do we have to figure out about this team in the second half? We'll talk about that and take more of your phone calls in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are coming to you live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. We got some business to do as we work our way through what we have to figure out about this Bills team at midseason. Let me work in a couple of calls, because we did ask people to respond to the question, who's the offensive MVP first half of the season? Take a few calls on this. Brian calling from Jamestown. Hello, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, guys. My question is that you got Matthews, you got Zay Jones, and you got Tate, another receiver, and now you're adding Kelvin Johnson.
Benjamin.
Which is a good thing. Will that open up for Tyrod to go third and short, you know, in the red zone? Will that open up, you know, the tight ends who have good hands and get yards out of the catch?
Well, I think so. Benjamin has to help, I would think.
Yeah, it opens everything up for everybody. I mean, here's the thing. Even when you had Charles Clay, you had Jordan Matthews, you had Zay Jones, you didn't have a guy who you consistently would throw the ball down the field to. Right, and I'm not just talking about nine routes down the field, which is a straight go route. He's a guy who's going to catch those deep overs. He can catch, you know, a 20-yard in cut or something, those big sixes that he talked about on the show earlier. And if you weren't listening earlier, you should go back and listen to that interview. It was a great interview that Murph and I did. Did you see how I did that there?
It was good. It was smooth. People had no idea.
No, but listen. He is a guy who defenses have to focus to, but it's all going to be on if Tyrod Taylor gets him the ball. You know, Tyrod Taylor has to show consistently that he's getting him the ball. If he's not trying to get him the ball looking his way, and I don't mean just stare at Kelvin Benjamin, but just if you see, here's the thing, when you have Kelvin Benjamin on the field, if you're getting Charles Clay back and he's healthy, we know you're going to go to Charles Clay because he's like that security blanket and it has been since the beginning of the season. Well, now you're going to get one-on-one matchups, and it's up to Tyrod Taylor to figure out who's one-on-one? And whoever's one-on-one, that's who you go to. Football has always been and will be always a game of matchups. You throw it to the guy who has the one-on-one matchup. If you trust that those guys can win, you throw it to that guy. Jordan Matthews has shown that, you know, he can catch the ball. You know, Charles Clay has shown that he can catch the ball. Kelvin Benjamin, we know he can catch the ball, but you have to figure out who has the one-on-one matchups. Bringing a guy like Kelvin Benjamin in opens things up for everybody else.
Can I just say this about Kelvin Benjamin too? You look at the, you know, they trade for him, and you look at, wow, 6'5", 243 pounds. That's one thing. When you see him on the field at practice today, or see him walk into our studio earlier today, or when you go to this game on Sunday and you see Kelvin Benjamin on the field, my guess is you're going to be like, whoa, everybody who sees him first time, whoa, what a big guy. Oh, he's a big guy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, unlike anybody else in the NFL, really.
You know,
he's that big at that position.
He really is a big, big receiver. And I think we saw it when we played down in Carolina, you know, back in the beginning of the season, when he and Funches were on the field at the same time, it was like, man, these dudes are big, yo. Yep. Like, they jump up and catch the ball. You know, it's nothing that DBs can do with that unless those DBs are 6'2", 6'3", you know. It's really hard to cover these dudes if you give these guys an opportunity. If you give Kelvin Benjamin an opportunity, he's going to catch the ball.
Speaking of big corners, I watched a little bit of Carolina yesterday, watched our buddy, our old buddy, Kevon Seymour making some
plays.
How's
he doing?
He's doing okay.
Really?
He was competitive. You know, same old Kevon, being competitive, breaking up passes.
Oh, man, that's what's
up. I'm happy for him.
I haven't had a chance to talk to him. I see him tweet certain things out on Twitter, but I'm glad that he's doing well down there. I'm glad that he's actually playing down there, you know.
Yeah, they have him in the slot, you know, nickel corner.
Yeah,
I like that kid. Here's Alan in Rochester. Alan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you today?
Real good.
I just wanted 3 points. One, because of the inconsistency of the offense, I would say Steven Hauschka would be the most valuable player.
Okay.
Would have been Clay, but he was out 3 games. The second thing I want to say is that Kelvin Benjamin, it was a great trade, and I think it'll open up the offense. LeSean McCoy will obviously benefit from it, along with the other receivers. Tyrod Taylor will be able to get the ball out of his hands quicker. And the third thing I wanted to ask you about is when Steve Tasker was on the show last week, they were talking about the trades, people not fitting. Sammy Watkins, it almost seemed like he was saying that he had a bad attitude, that he didn't fit because he didn't want to be here. And that surprised me because I thought Sammy wanted to come to Buffalo. I thought he was a Bills fan beforehand. And then when I was watching yesterday on TV, Channel 8 in Rochester had a thing, and they also intimated that he didn't fit because certain things. I'm just confused. Please explain it to me.
What did you hear there, Donald? I don't know what Steve said or what you guys are saying.
Yeah, I don't even remember what we talked. I don't remember talking about Sammy having a bad attitude, but, you know, I did hear some things about Sammy Watkins over the years that he was here and his – you know, not to trash him, but his work ethic and certain situations and things like that. But ultimately, look, even if Sammy Watkins was, like, grew up a Bills fan or whatever, you could go into a certain situation, and in the beginning, it's like, man, this is great. Like, I was a fan of this team growing up. I want to help, I want to play for this city and all of this stuff. But if you're not happy at work, your mindset changes, you know. And if you're coming into work every day and you're not happy, you want out. You're seeing it over in Pittsburgh with Martavis Bryant. You know, he just wants out. It doesn't matter that the team is sitting at 6-2. You know, it doesn't matter that they've gone through all of this stuff with him and suspensions and all of that stuff. He just feels like, I'm not happy here. I want out. And it doesn't matter if I'm a fan of the team. It doesn't matter all of the things that they've done for me. I don't want to be here. I don't know if that's how Sammy Watkins felt deep down. But, you know, if that's how he felt, it wouldn't shock me at all.
Hey, we got to finish this up because we talked last hour about what we know about the Buffalo Bills after the first half of the season. We think we know who Tyrod Taylor is. We think the special teams are good. We know the path to the playoffs is wide open. We know now the Bills have a strong home field advantage. But what do we not know? What do we have to figure out in these final 8 games? And the number one question for me, Donald, is how good is this defense? They were great, lights out, giving up, 13 points per game in the first 4 games of the year, and then that's fallen off in a big way. They were great taking the ball away, which, if you look back on it, may have been the saving grace for that Buffalo defense. And as we saw against the Jets last Thursday, once the turnovers, the takeaway stopped, the defense was not that good. So I still think I don't have a good handle on how good this Buffalo Bills defense is. And as we talked about with Chris Brown, I'd like to see a little bit change of approach, maybe sending more pressure and dialing up some more pressure. But it might be, to me, the biggest question of the second half of the season. What kind of a defense do we have here? What do you think?
I think the biggest question, what we still have to figure out is, and I like you. I like you too. I guess you like me, huh? I like your answer there. How good is the defense? Because we don't know how good the defense is. In the beginning, we thought it was very, very good, and then in the past couple of weeks, it's hasn't been the same, you know. And then you look at the Jets game. We, like Brownie was just talking about, you could always hang your hat on, this is a very good run defense. They don't let anything go. And then last week, you didn't have that either, you know. So I don't know how good this defense is. That is something, especially as we face some of these very good quarterbacks in the next couple of weeks, we're going to find out, you know, how good this defense is. For me, I'm going to go with, can they win on the road? You know, and this is not something we talked about in the office. I just kind of threw this one in there.
But can
this
team, Donald's going rogue.
I'm going rogue. Sometimes you got to go rogue. It works out better when you go rogue sometimes. But can this team win on the road? We know they're 4-0 at home, but they play totally different, as Brownie was just talking about, on the road. You know, and so can this team win on the road? And you have some tough games coming up on the road. You know, you have some games obviously at home, but you need to be able to win some of these games on the road if you want to go into the playoffs.
That's a legitimate question, but if you say that, then you presuppose that the approach is different on the road. I mean, they won in Atlanta. Atlanta was a pretty good team. I mean, what possibly could be different? You know, surroundings are different. The crowd is different. I get that. But really, from a football sense, what's different about playing on the road, playing at home?
You'd like to say that. What's different? But they're, what, 1-3 on the road right now, you know? So what is different? How come you guys are 1-3 on the road and 4-0 at home? What's, I mean, from the obvious, other than you're traveling and all of that stuff, you had the crowd. Like, what's different? You're doing everything the same way every week. How come you guys are not getting it done on the road? How come you're scoring, you're double the points that you're putting up on offense, or double the points that you're putting up at home than when you go on the road? Why is that? You know, so can this team win on the road?
Right,
I think
so
that's something we still got to figure out.
Off the top of my head answer, you go to the Jets and you go to Carolina and you don't take the ball away. You hold Carolina to the 3 field goals. Mm-hmm. You go to the Jets, you've been living off turnovers. You don't get any. So there's those two losses.
Right.
You go to Cincinnati and I don't know what happened. You know, the Bengals played pretty well. I don't have an answer for Cincinnati. I don't think there's a big difference in their approach, home and road.
I don't think it's an approach thing. It's just, can you finish the game on the road? How about that? Let's just put it that way. Can you finish a game? Let's take the Jets game out. They really just got handled in the Jets game. But when you talk about the Carolina game and you talk about the Cincinnati game, those are two games that you were in the game and you could have won those games. You should have won those games, you know? So how come you couldn't get it done on the road where it seems like at home you can get it done?
Here's another midseason issue, I think, when we talk about what do we have to figure out, and we only got a minute or so here. We got to figure out if the Bills can run the ball consistently. Mm-hmm. Can they consistently run the ball? When they run the ball, they're a tough out, very tough to beat. They couldn't do that at all against the Jets. They couldn't do anything on the ground against the Jets. And in their previous losses, in particular in Cincinnati, they were unable to run the ball or pass the ball effectively. But they are a team that's built on the run. They are a team that counts on LeSean McCoy to carry the load. And if they can't run the ball consistently, I don't think they have much of a chance of success down the road.
Now, here's the argument, and I think we were just talking about this with Brownie. Do we know that this team wants to go through the run? Do we know that for sure? And the history would show that, you know, but is that what this team is? I don't think they have an identity yet, which is still yet. That's something that we do have to figure out. What's the identity of this offense?
Just because they had Calvin Benjamin, you think they're going to start flinging it all over the place?
No, but they haven't been able to run the ball. You know, I'm not saying that they're going to start flinging it all around the place. They haven't. If that's their identity, you have not been doing what you're best at, you know. So what is your identity? You've been passing the ball and trying to win games in the passing game. And so what is your identity? I think adding Kelvin Benjamin does change things up. And I'm not saying they're going to fling it all around, but it will ease teams back. You know, it will back those teams off you.
Yeah.
How do you use Kelvin Benjamin now? You have Charles Clay coming back. You know, do you feel like you have to get these guys the ball because they're in the game? I mean, that's something that we still have to learn about this team.
Awful lot to figure out. I think they're a fascinating team, and I'm really looking forward to the second half of the season. Yeah. We'll talk more about these issues, second half of the season issues, tomorrow on the show, but going to take a break here and come back and wrap things up in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
We learned it's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Kelvin Benjamin, the big man, in the studio for the first hour of the show, and he talked about how his previous relationship, working with Brandon Bean, working with Sean McDermott, may have impacted their decision to trade for him last week.
I think I knew what they knew what I could bring to the field, you know, and bring to the team. But I think what they kind of looked and seen what I bring to the locker room. You know what I'm saying? I'm a very humble guy. I mean, real chill. You know what I'm saying? Real friendly. I'm a big team guy. You know what I'm saying? Because it's all about winning. You know what I'm saying? You need that team to be that one unit. You know what I'm saying? You can't be selfish. And that's the type of guy I am. I mean, I want everybody to ball. I want everybody to eat.
That is Kelvin Benjamin, who joined us in the first hour of the show. Also today, Andrew Brandt, who covers the business of the NFL for mmqb.si.com, talked about last Tuesday's trade deadline and how crazy it was.
Not only Haddon, but Ron Wolf, the GM at the time I was there for a lot of the years, and I used to put these proposals in front of the league to encourage trading. We said, there's no buzz like there is in baseball and basketball. Let's make it happen. Couple things. One, move it back, not just 2 weeks like they've done, but move it back to Thanksgiving, after Thanksgiving, to make it a real deadline and make it a real fun, buyers, sellers, all those kind of things. And the response we got in so many words was, we don't want that. We don't want the rent-a-player for the stretch run that baseball had at that time.
Andrew Brandt talking about the trade deadline. Our Twitter poll today, who's the Bills' offensive MVP? Almost like everybody didn't know how to vote, but Tyrod Taylor comes out on top of our Twitter poll with most of the respondents going with Tyrod Taylor as the most valuable player on offense. LeSean McCoy was second, and then some others. Donald, thanks for doing the show today. Tomorrow we got Steve Tasker, we got Trey Wingo tomorrow, and we're almost out of time here today, so thanks.
I look forward to tomorrow.
I do, too. That's pretty good. Very concise. I want to thank our Entercom board op today. Derek Kramer, production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. We'll see you tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.